football head coach Pat Fitzgerald, Chicago Urban League president Sherry Renner, and another installment of the Swap Meet with Greg Clam. Now here's your host, a man who is hoping to see some action tonight in the third or fourth quarter, Justin Kaufman.
Is that a euphemism for something? If I were going to be a Chicago Bear tonight and I was playing in the third or fourth quarter, I'd be a number in the high 40s. I think I've decided that. I'm a 47. You know, like a 48. That kind of thing. Maybe even a 49, you know. That number, it's a confident number. It's a bruising number. It's a number that people look at and they go, that guy is not fast. Nor is he explosive because he's a playmaker, but he made the team, and that's what counts. That's me in a nutshell. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up for you tonight. I'm so excited. The Bears are playing preseason game in New England, but we're going to talk college football. Wow, this is great. Coach Pat Fitzgerald going to join us tonight in the Northwestern Wildcats. Talk about a tremendous season and how you build on that expectation. Last year, the team won 10 games. They were ranked number 13 at one point. Remember that?
I do.
That was a huge deal. They went into that game against Iowa where they were thinking, oh my gosh, the Wildcats might be the team to beat. Now they got their butt handed to them against Iowa, then Michigan. But
I was at that Iowa game.
Oh, you were?
Very disappointing.
That was a game where you thought maybe this was it.
We arrived. I remember we arrived a little bit late. We walked over from my in-laws' house, who lived not too far away in Evanston, and the place was crawling with Hawkeyes fans.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hawkeyes fans in Chicago.
And we had they don't have any seats. You know, they're just kind of benches. Mm-hmm. So.
You had to like rub shoulders with the black and
you
yellow.
You know, like the whole row was, you know, like taken up with people, but you had to squeeze four people into no place, you know. Like,
you know, they always say that, you know, Northwestern is Chicago's Big Ten team. And you realize that it's probably really lucrative for the Wildcats to play home games in the Big Ten because there's so many Big Ten alum in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So do they play Minnesota or Indiana or Ohio State or Michigan or Iowa or Penn State, or there's so many people who went to those schools,
yeah.
Purdue, that they get three quarters of the stadium is sold out right away because, you know, everyone wants to be like Boilermakers,
right? Yeah,
then they all go to Wrigleyville.
It's really exciting to go to a college football game. I hadn't been to one in quite some time, and it's, you know, it's just right up in Evanston,
yeah.
And it's like watching, you know, like on TV, you know, like Saturday afternoon bands playing, people all over. Great.
Well, we'll be talking with Coach Pat Fitzgerald about their camp there in Kenosha right now, getting ready for the season that starts in 2 weeks. Talk about expectations, but also about the idea of being a star player and now a star coach. He's very sought after. You know, it's a little scary if you're a Northwestern fan because he has been such a rock for that team. And they had 10 wins. It's one of the first times in their history to have 10 wins. And every time an opening comes up in the SEC, they're like, what about Pat Fitzgerald? So hopefully he likes living in Chicago as opposed to like Alabama. You know, you get a lot bigger on the football stage. But hey, you know, we've got a Cheesecake Factory. So you got to balance, you know. We got a lot of freshies, you know. We've got a lot of protein bars in the Chicago area. So I don't know. You're not going to find that if you go to Arkansas, right? Anyway, also tonight, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line is going to join us. We're going to talk about the big news today that looks like the superintendent is ready to fire 7 police officers. We'll also talk about the CPS CTU strike talk, negotiations heating up. A training day is in place on Saturday for teachers to prepare them for a strike. And sources say it's a high possibility. It's always good.
What does that mean?
The only way I know that language is for weather forecasts. So it just means that it's like, you know, it might rain.
So do they pick it?
I think they teach them what's going to happen, what to say. Yeah,
yeah,
what media. Maybe they do role-playing. Maybe someone acts like they're a reporter, like, why are you striking? And then if you freak out, they're like, freeze. you're out. Tom, come on in. And Tom comes in and goes, we're striking for the future of our children. They're like, great answer. Next. Now, Tawny, get up here. That's training. They're doing a lot of role play, a lot of trust falls. We'll talk with Mike about that. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, we're going to talk about Ron Burke from the Active Transportation Alliance is going to join us. We'll talk about the a couple of bike accidents that have happened in the city recently, a high-profile one on Monday where or Tuesday where a biker was killed, where a bike lane merged with traffic because of construction. And you and I were talking about this, Pete, and we really want to get to the bottom of what do you do in that situation. Because obviously the bikers merged with traffic. The worst thing that could have happened. But what do you do when the bike lanes are sort of, I guess, when they're compromised? So we'll talk about the confusing right-of-way of bikes and cars when it comes to construction. All that tonight. Plus, it's Greg Flam's here, Swap Meet. We got good stuff tonight. It's going to be a good show. Chicago Urban League, we'll talk about their 10-year plan for bridging the wealth gap. So much to do tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon.
Can I break in with some breaking news?
What do you got?
Bears scored on their first drive. Field goal, 3-0.
I did say 13-3. I might want to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Adjust to a 14-2, maybe a 15-1.
Sorry to interrupt. It was important.
No.
important.
This just in. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. The Bears got a first down. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's moving to fire 7 police officers who lied or covered up information surrounding the Laquan McDonald shooting. When told of this news, Mayor Rahm Emanuel was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You don't have to do that. You get at least 300 days. You don't have to do it so fast. Why so fast? Then he just went, I'm trying. Excuse. Let me talk, please. Can I? Yep. You're interrupting. That's my Rahm Emanuel. So, yep. Can I talk? Chicago Teachers Union's having a strike training day this weekend to get teachers prepared for what sources are saying is a high possibility of a work stoppage to start the school year. How about instead of a strike training, just a negotiation training for both sides? Let's stop this Cold War style back and forth where we just keep pointing nukes at each other. Let's use the Olympics as a point of reference. Let's get together and do a decathlon. How about that? Loser pays into the pension fund, right? I think we figured out. If not a decathlon, at least an obstacle course. I want to see Forrest Claypool do the tires, you know, Karen Lewis get up over the wall. Let's make it happen. Democrats Day at the Illinois State Fair. They blasted Bruce Rauner, saying he's the same as Donald Trump over and over and over and over. Really? You know, I'm not too happy with the way the state is going, but Rauner Trump seems a little far-fetched. I mean, just for the bronze self-tanning alone, I don't think Rauner's that bronzed. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to at least, you know, compare him in a more... a righteous kind of way. I mean, Trump's just too good looking. He's got that orange look. He looks good. The State Department says that the $400 million payment to Iran was not ransom for release of hostages, but leverage. What? Is that the same thing? I think it's the same thing. And also, isn't leverage a show on TNT? Or is that ransom? I don't know. Maybe they are different. Gawker.com was sold to Univision yesterday, and today it's being put to bed. The gossip news site that symbolizes the online news generation is shutting down next week. This, of course, after they lost a court case against Hulk Hogan and were forced into bankruptcy. I thought it was in bad taste when Hulk Hogan kept putting his hand to his ear, asking us to get louder during the trial. Remember when he used to do that? When the big, bad internet media had him in a headlock? No word on whether or not the other sites, Deadspin, Gizmodo, or Jezebel, will continue. Man, this world's going to be less of one without Deadspin. Let's hope that Deadspin survives, right? Love that site. Best site on the internet. Ryan Lochte, you know what? I want to pass on this one so bad. So sick of this story. The brain-dead swimmer has made the Olympics a secondary story to his weird Forge gas station bathroom adventure. We get it. You like gas station bathrooms. Is that a felony? I guess it is. Can a judge just hand down a sentence that says he can't be in the spotlight anymore? Like, no more news coverage for Ryan Lochte? He can't be on reality TV? That would be enough. I would think that's fair judgment. The NFL wants to interview a couple players connected to an Al Jazeera report about PEDs in football, two of which play for the Packers. The players' union says it's a witch hunt. I say suspend them for no reason. 30 games. Clay Matthews gets 35 games just for playing with long hair. It's football. Don't have long hair. It's a ridiculous look. You're not in the band Nelson. You play linebacker. Cut your hair. In weather, it's hot in the city. It's also going to rain. In sports, the Bears are underway in Foxborough and for their second preseason game. Tom Brady was supposed to start, but last minute, he didn't. He's out for four games for deflated balls. The Bears' offense does look good, besides the penalties, which is just, you know, that's part of the course with the Bears' offense. They already have more points and yards than the entire first game against the Broncos. As I say that, Jay Cutler gets sacked. The Cubs sweep the Brewers with a huge game today from Roy. Chris Bryant, have mercy, five hits. Arrieta pitched poorly, walking seven guys, the most in his career. To give you an idea, I think Clayton Kershaw has walked seven guys all season long. But it doesn't matter. What matters is changing whoop, there it is, after Cub homers at Wrigley. There are better home run songs than track 12 on Jock Jams 2. I mean, I thought they fired the DJ. Whoever's hired to replace them has to change that, like, stat. What's next? Borat quotes on the scoreboard? Austin Power clips between innings? Come on, Cubs. World Series around the corner. The whole world's watching. The Sox play tonight. That's all I got. And finally, the police will be patrolling Wrigleyville this weekend looking for drunk drivers. They're going to be diligent doing checkpoints. Or, you know, they could just follow the Wrigley Bros as they stumble out of bars singing Closing Time, walking to their Range Rovers. It's pretty much fish in a barrel. And if they could just keep them in jail till the Cubs season is over, all of Chicago will thank you. That's the carryout for August 18th, 2016. It's so muggy tonight that we're only giving you two salt packets with your order. Hey, you got to stay hydrated. Coming up, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line will join us to talk about police firings, talk about strikes, talk about everything that happened today in Illinois politics. That's coming up here on The Download. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
Like my mom always said, the cover-up and lie, always worse.
Yeah.
Always worse.
Well, I thought you were going to say always works.
No.
No.
As we've learned in politics and with high-profile people. And I, you know what? I'm with you. You know, you get sucked into this vortex. Yeah. There's a gravitational pull of a story, and you can't help but not do
help.
It, even though I don't want to.
Right?
Lochte's just a knucklehead.
Yeah, and so far, kind of knucklehead thing to do, not necessarily something that really garners worldwide attention. And the idea of, like, you know, one of the things I hate about that story is that, you know, Pete and I were kind of talking about how it's his mom that kind of told reporters, you know, he's like, where are you, Ryan?
Yeah.
Oh, Mom, I got mugged. You know, I can't really tell you what's going on right now. Oh, I'm going to tell everybody.
Yeah.
So now he had to go to the police after that and keep it going.
If things don't go well for me here at WGN, I'm going to become a consultant for athletes and politicians and say, look, Ryan, all you have to do is say, we were drunk, went into a bathroom, things got a little crazy. We paid for the repairs. We apologize. Rio's put on a great Olympic Games.
Yeah.
We're so sorry. Boom. No story. End of discussion.
Here's what I would have said. It was, listen, we had to get our cupping in. We haven't had our cupping yet. We need to find you have to do cupping in a gas station bathroom. Nothing, no harm, no foul.
Of course, four dudes in a gas station bathroom, cupping takes on a whole new meaning. Anyway.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, my guest in studio, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line. Good to see you. It's a Thursday instead of a Wednesday, but we're glad you're here anyway.
Hey, man. It's good to be here.
The Daily Line,
anything
of course.
Anything for you, JK.
The Daily Line, of course, the news site that covers all things Illinois politics. So let's start today. I mean, we've been talking about police on this program for a while. We've been talking about the Department of Justice report that came out in Baltimore that will be out in Chicago soon. But let's
well, a year.
A year.
A year.
But let's talk about what's happening on the ground. Seven officers, looks like Superintendent Eddie Johnson's going to move on firing seven officers.
He's already said that he will, and that he's moving through the process to do it, and that the Chicago Inspector General actually recommended that up to 10 people be fired. Two people have retired, and Eddie Johnson has said, well, one of them he doesn't think deserves to be fired. And one of the people that he's going to fire is the partner of the shooter. And, you know, so there's a whole series of people that are going to get the axe. And this is because the police department has a thing called Rule 14, which is essentially if you lie in under any circumstances, right, you could be fired. The police department has never really enforced that. And so now all of a sudden, Eddie Johnson is enforcing it. He had said when he first became superintendent a number of months ago, if somebody lies on the job, if they're doing something bad, I'm not going to tolerate it and we're going to get rid of them. You know, that's been a lot of talk for a long time. So it's kind of interesting to see it actually happen.
Do we consider this a shift in the way that the police department operates? I mean, is Eddie Johnson bringing a new sort of transparency to the role?
Well, you know, what's also interesting is that there is a whole slate of new command staff that he's brought in. So he's basically swept out everybody that had anything to do with Gary McCarthy and is completely gone. You know, so here's the thing. You know, 1 point is an idea, 2 points is a line, 3 points is a trend. So we're not necessarily at a trend yet.
Right.
And so I think that it's going to happen a number of times before we're actually going to see something really significant.
The other thing this week that was interesting politically was, you know, the press really pushed on Mayor Emanuel when the IG report came out saying, what do you think about these? Are you going to fire these? Are you going to push the superintendent to fire these people? And he came out and said, hey, there's essentially a firewall. Like, he does his job. I hire him to do his job. Do you believe that? Do you believe that the mayor's involved?
No, all indications are behind the scenes that the mayor is in constant contact with the superintendent and he's not really working independently. There is no agency in the city of Chicago that is not touched by the mayor. Everything we hear everywhere in the city is nothing moves.
Then why does he say that? The mayor. I mean, why does he act like a bystander?
Because politically, it's better for the mayor to be able to have some distance for somebody, and so that if somebody screws up, you can say, it wasn't me, it was that guy over there. But, you know, there's this other thing that's going on, too, which is that Chicago is going to have this DOJ report that's going to come out sometime in the summer or fall of 2017. And when the report comes out, there's also at the same time the DOJ is going to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And what happened in Newark, which had a similar
yeah,
report in 2014, and Baltimore, which just had a report come out earlier this month, is in both cases, the DOJ had an agreement in principle that was made with the city, which basically is, these are the things now that the city is going to be doing that's going to be different. And the DOJ, the force that they have behind it is, well, we're going to make this agreement with you, so we're not going to sue you, and we're not going to take you to court and make you make these changes. The DOJ has force, has the ability through federal law to,
right,
be able to take local police departments to court
and they don't
make
want
them make
that.
Changes.
Nobody wants that.
Well, and so what has happened in Newark is that Newark was not able to make the changes, make the cultural changes enough. And a couple of months ago, there is now a consent decree, which the consent decree is rather than actually have a court case, you go and you negotiate something with the judge. And the consent decree is basically the DOJ is appointing a court-appointed, there's going to be a court-appointed monitor that's approved by the DOJ to oversee the Newark Police Department. The mayor of Newark and the Newark Common Council, which is their city council, no longer has the ability to control the police department. And that very same thing could potentially happen to the city of Chicago if they don't get their house in order.
But it sounds like they see that as a possibility, and the idea of moving to fire police officers is a step in the direction of getting your house in order.
I think certainly that is definitely on the mind of Eddie Johnson and Mayor Emanuel. Listen, losing control of the police department is not just simply, I can't run the police anymore. There are a lot of things that are tied into what you do with the police department. You know, you have the ability to ensure that you can call up, an alderman can call up a commander and say, hey, look, there are some people that are messing around over here and I want to get rid of them. They're not the right element in our neighborhood. We don't like those people. And there's a lot of class divides that are reinforced, not just racial, but class divides that are enforced by the police department. This is a reality that we have here in Chicago, and I don't think any police officer will deny that. So if the Chicago Police Department is no longer controlled by the alderman and the mayor, that means they lose the ability to be able to do that. And that, it is a potential huge change.
Yeah, that definitely is culture change. Mike Fouché, the dailyline.net. Dailyline.net. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We got to talk CPS CTU. I feel like
it's not a week unless we talk about it, right?
We're the play-by-play color commentary of this because it was early on in this story that we said, you know, something's a little too quiet.
I am the Marv Albert.
You are the Marv Albert of
CPS CTU.
School negotiations.
That's exactly right. All right, take it downtown.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché in studio. He's here every week. Today, Thursday instead of Wednesday.
Yep.
So let's talk. We got two stories to get to. Democrats Day. Yesterday was Governor's Day. They're getting at Governor's it down in Day. Springfield, but it's just a lot of rhetoric. Yesterday, the Republicans went after the Democratic machine.
Right.
Today,
Never expected that.
And today, it's Trump Rauner. Like over and over and over, Rauner Trump. You know who's like Trump Rauner? You know Rauner reminds me of Trump.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the move of the Democrats in Springfield.
So, you know, really, I mean, first off, for anybody who hasn't gone, which is 99.99999% of Illinois, so they have this section of the state fairgrounds set aside where there's like a rallying area where the Democrats all go. And it's not near anything. It's really weird. It's just in this other place, and there's a stage and chairs and a tent, and And so politicians go up and they give speeches, and nobody's really paying attention and eating nachos and whatever. And that's Democrat Day, and then Governor's Day is, you know, because it's a Republican that's the governor. That's Governor's Day, and then the same deal happens, and everyone cheers, and it's all party loyalists. There's these buses that drive down from Chicago and all of the state that carry people, and
it's
essentially like a
day off for politicos.
Yeah, exactly, and they all hang out in the sun and talk, and you know,
a lot of straw hats,
a lot of straw hats, and everyone shows off their cool new stickers and buttons and stuff, and So it's not cool, but they think it is. And so then after that, the next day, there's almost always the there's a convention, big speech. It's usually in one of the hotels that's in Springfield. And so there's a lot more people that are there. And there's the big speech from the governor, or the big speech from Madigan, big speech from whoever's running for governor or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And everyone applauds. And they put out their big punchlines, you know. So this year, the punchline for the Republicans is Madigan. He's the machine. He controls the state. Fight Mike Madigan. Vote for Republicans. And then for the Democrats, the big punchline this year is, hey, remember this guy Trump? And so, I mean, everything is Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump
That's
that.
That's annoying.
Well, it is annoying.
It's annoying because most of the Republicans in the state of Illinois have renounced Trump.
Yes, but there's a really interesting thing. And you know, Rich Miller from Capital Facts, he's been writing about this pretty consistently, which is that Mike Madigan's not on the ballot for most people. The vast majority of people in Illinois, they don't care about Mike Madigan. But Donald Trump is on the ballot. And Donald Trump is a big problem for Republicans. Because for the most part, if you're north of I-70, you're probably not too crazy about Trump. South of I-70, Trump's got a lot of support. And a lot of Republicans are having a lot of trouble with Trump.
It's the flip side to the idea that Trump's not providing any support for the down ballot candidates, but he also is an open season for Democrats to say, oh, you're in line with this guy,
right,
and then just hammer it home.
Or another way of thinking about it is he's an open sore for the Republicans.
Yeah, right.
And they can't run away from him. You know, he keeps coming after them. And this continues to be a problem. And I think it's dragging down Mark Kirk. I mean, Mark Kirk is having a terrible time running for Senate, the current incumbent Republican senator. And I think it's going to be a problem for pretty much everybody on the ballot, you know, all the way down to dog catcher.
We'll be all over that in the next couple months. Another story in Chicago that is heating up is the negotiations over the teachers' contract.
Can it get hotter? You keep saying heating up.
Every week you're like heating up.
We're now like super heating.
I think we're getting close to boiling. We're what, 2 weeks out from the beginning of school?
Yep.
Two and change. This Saturday there's going to be strike preparation days. We see in the news. We see sources that say that it's going from likely to very likely to highly likely when it comes to a strike. I mean, is this is the rhetoric we warned of, meaning when negotiations aren't going well for either side, the media becomes the mouthpiece.
So teachers don't want to give up any more cuts to their salaries or pensions, and CPS has to get cuts. They have to. They have a $300 million gap that they have to fill, and some significant portion has to come from teacher cuts or pay cuts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rock and a hard place. So I think, you know, really what we're looking at is that first day of school is the 7th, 6th, mm-hmm. 6th of September. Teachers are going to likely have the first day of school, because first day of school is important for a lot of reasons. It's how you count how many students there are in order to figure out how much money each school should get and federal aid and all kinds of other things. So they're not going to interrupt that. But as soon as that happens, teachers, they have to give a 10-day notification before they go on strike. So, you know, September 16th is, you know, really what it's looking like.
So there's a possibility that the kids go back to school and the parents here get back into routine for a very short amount of time until a strike interrupts the routine.
That's what happened 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened 3 years ago. And so, you know, we should be prepared sometime mid-September for there be a strike.
Now, we've been – I think that the typical Illinois and Chicago citizen is a little bit more versed in this than last time around. Last time around, it was a contract dispute. It didn't seem to be around the issues you just set up, the idea that we all know that CPS needs money. We've seen it. We've seen the cuts. We've seen Forrest Claypool come in. Is there any worry about favor or clout or just momentum when it comes to a teacher strike, that the teachers really don't want to test the mettle of the Chicago parents because they're more well-versed this time around?
Citywide, teachers are extremely popular, particularly in African-American and Latino communities. And those are the ones that Rahm Emanuel needs in order to be reelected, flat out. And the case that CTU is making, although not very well, is that the city has the ability to raise more money. And their message has been pretty mixed. They could do a better job of it. The city could increase taxes for more people. And so far, the taxes that have been raised, the property tax, the water tax, are regressive. They impact everybody equally as opposed to impacting wealthy people more. And, you know, some of the things that they have in mind, like a head tax, which is, you know, business has to pay money for each employee, things like that, a luxury tax, you know, those kind of things would potentially impact wealthier people more. But, you know, they haven't been making that, they haven't been telling that story very well. Mm. I mean, most of what we've been hearing about is we're not giving up. You know, we're not going to give something up, as opposed to being able to say, this is something that the city needs to do for everybody.
And that's a big part of it, is telling the story. I mean, it's almost like in a weird way, an election of sorts, that you have to tell your story better than the other candidate.
Oh, that's politics. Right, it's storytelling, man. Yeah. You know, you got to be able to tell the right story.
Mike Fouché from The Daily Line. Get him at dailyline.net. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, great to be here.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Well, Chicago's always been known as one of this country's greatest cities, and one of the most segregated. And it seems every year the city moves further in that direction. Whether it be a lack of resources, jobs, opportunities, the wealth gap widens and inequalities lead to poverty, which lead to problems like crime and violence. So what can be done? Is it government programs? Is it new political leadership? Is it a paradigm shift? Is it private investment? Well, first, we need a plan. And the Chicago Urban League has one. They just put out the blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. Among other things, it takes on how to bridge the wealth gap and address structural racism and inequality. Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, established in 1916. The Chicago Urban League is celebrating its 100th birthday. Yes. The organization works for economic, educational, and social progress for African Americans. And Sherry Runner's my guest tonight at the big table. Ms. Runner, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, so let's talk about this blueprint. This is something you guys have been working on. Why put out a 10-year plan on this? Why does the Chicago Urban League have to do this?
So I think one of the things that you said when you introduced me is that we're celebrating 100 years. And one of the things that we want to make sure that we're saying is we're commemorating 100 years of service to the Chicago community. We have made progress as African Americans, mm-hmm. in the nation and in the city, But the actuality is that that progress is fraught with a lot of problems, and we still have a lot to do. And we say commemorating our 100th year here in the city of Chicago. And what do we need to do to really make some changes at this point as we look at what we want to have happen in 10 years? We want to say this is a watershed moment. We're looking at a lot of different things happening in the city, and we need to say, where do we want to be in 10 years?
I mean, you know, when I kind of mentioned at the top about the idea of it being a segregated city, and it seems to be getting worse, you know, more and more we see opportunities, resources, and that wealth gap widen. Right. Why is that? Why is that happening in Chicago? Why in a big city like this with so many opportunities, why is it that we're seeing some that get more and some be left behind?
Well, I think the important thing that we need to talk about is that segregation in and of itself is not bad. So African-Americans, Jewish people, Greek people living in their own communities is not so bad. But the issue is that allocation of resources when you talk about segregated communities is what is important. And as it relates to African-American communities, those resources are not flowing there. And so that impacts schools, mm-hmm. Education, which is one of our most important pillars, jobs, wealth creation, another thing. How do we deal with that? Those are things that we need to do to or pay attention to in order to change the trajectory of those communities.
Well, I mean, those communities are not unlike other communities in Chicago. I mean, you've seen with the Latino communities as well, and some other areas in Chicago just not being developed or not moving at the same rate as other places in the city. And I just always wonder, and you guys broke it down with education, jobs, and development.
Right.
I mean, is finding solutions in those three areas, you feel like in 10 years you can see a change, you can see a cultural change where we might be seeing some growth in areas that we hadn't before?
Well, as with any business, the important part about a plan is the idea that we're going to hold ourselves accountable and say, these are things that we need to see changes in to make sure that the city changes. The fact that the city of Chicago is 30% African American, 30% Hispanic, 30% white, that when you have a large percentage of your population struggling, if you don't pay attention to these things, the city begins to die as it would be a part of your body. You would not neglect your body that way. So it's important for us to make some real decisions about what we're going to do and how we're going to address the issues that face our communities.
There's so many things on the table, and we'll talk through it this hour. But you do call it a blueprint for an equitable Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You go out of your way to talk about inequalities, almost bridging the wealth gap. I mean, the gap, mm-hmm. not necessarily fixing violence or addressing crime or other issues. It really does start with the idea of sort of, you know, everybody on an equal playing field.
Right. Well, so we think about three things in this plan. One is changing the narrative. What does it mean to have inequity? And how do we talk about the fact that when we talk about African-American communities, we expect people to say, oh, because you're black people or because this is African-Americans, that those things are not, we don't care about them.
Right.
Because that's what we expect of black people. So we have to change the
narrative. Like the narrative in the media, you mean? Or like just in general? Like just the way
in
we
general,
are as well?
In general. And I think that we can see that as a result of our political discussion right now. What does that look like? How do we think about inequity in our society? And that's a baseline issue that we need to start talking about.
Do you think that that's is that difficult to do when you want to change a narrative? I mean, I'm trying to think about how to change people's perceptions or people's behaviors or attitudes. I mean, that all plays into the narrative. I mean, what can you do to change the narrative so it plays into more of the idea of the things that are in the report?
Well, you know what's interesting? As we've started to roll this plan out and as we've started to talk to people, there was a comment because, you know, social media is so anonymous and what people talk about. One of the comments that came out is, If I'm poor and white, I'm out of sight. But that really is the issue. If you're poor, what happens to you in our society? And how do we talk about what's the difference between being poor and black and what that means? And how do you say to someone that I need to understand the difference between being black in America and being white in America?
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of that one is better or more worthy than the other. It's a matter of really talking about what are the issues and how do we start to break this down and have a conversation about race.
Or, yeah, just understand where other people are coming from. That not everybody thinks like you do.
No, 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 not everybody thinks like I do, for
or anybody,
sure.
Right. I mean, but that's, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, when you see these political fights burst on social media or talks, you know, or sort of just really incendiary talk about race, it feels like it's people just won't accept that there are other ways to think about the things that are in this world.
Well, and so that's part two of what this this plan talks about, which is really important, and it's a shift. For 100 years, the Urban League has been really working on dealing with the symptoms of inequity and structural inequity, and those are things like the violence that we're seeing right now, the poverty that we're seeing right now, the family fracture that we're seeing right now, and those are a result of a lot of policies and practices that have occurred over the last 50, 60, 100 years and what that does to our community. And so now we want to talk about how are we going to change that policy practice? What are we going to do to deal with the root causes?
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. She's my guest tonight at the big table. We're talking about their new Blueprint for an Equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, Sherry Runner. She's the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, which has been around for 100 years, commemorating its 100th commemoration.
Yes. Commemoration.
No birthdays.
Yes.
No celebrations in that. The organization works for economic, educational, and social progress for African Americans. And they just put out a brand new study, which is a blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. And I find it interesting, too, because it's a plan that, I mean, there's been a lot of fervor or clamoring for institutions like the Urban League and other places to step up and come up with solutions for some of the things that are ailing the African-American community, violence, crime, poverty. And this seems to be it.
Well, I mean, I think that's that the important part about that is what's ailing the African-American community is about symptoms. People look at violence. People look at poverty. People say, you know, why haven't the African-American community or the people done more to pull themselves up? That doesn't exist with the structural barriers that are inhibiting people from doing that. And it's interesting because it's one of those things that we talk about and we do not allow anybody to say that this is really an important impediment to people achieving. And it's very
these
different.
These sort of structural barriers.
These structural barriers.
Well, what are they? What are the structural barriers? I mean, if we sort of break down, what are the things that are keeping African-Americans from being in a situation where they could have an equitable Chicago?
Well, let's look at it. Let's say, you know, the Chicago Urban League has been around for 100 years. Plessy versus Ferguson was separate but equal. Jim Crow was there to stop people from moving forward. Then there was contract buying as people moved north during the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. That stopped people from attaining and maintaining wealth. One of the big things
that was, and Natalie Moore was in, we talked about that. She's the author of The South Side, about the idea of you didn't actually buy the property.
Yes.
You bought almost a contract from landlords. It was renting, but it was not.
Right.
Essentially a deal that you couldn't actually accrue wealth. You didn't own anything. You couldn't sell it.
Right. And the number one way that people accrue and transfer wealth generationally is through real estate. So if we fast forward and to the 50s when we had the FHA and redlining, we know that African Americans couldn't own homes, didn't get into the real estate market until we got into blockbusting when whites flew from the city. And then we had, in the 2000s, we're talking about reverse redlining and predatory lending. So a lot of African American families bought real estate in various different times of the top of the bubble, and then had no wealth to transfer to their families. This is really crucial. This is a part of how do we make people feel like they're a part of the fabric of the American society, and what do we do about that?
That's so interesting. When you talk about structural barriers and we get to the nuts and bolts of it, the real estate world that African Americans have lived in has always, just in the situations you just talked about for 60 years, it's always been behind the curve. What happened with the market crash in 2008, it was because of subprime lending,
right?
And it was mostly focused on people who didn't have wealth, and they were the people who were left to clean up the mess. I mean, it seems to be a cyclical nature.
It is cyclical, and that's just one piece of
right.
it. But we can talk about, you know, what happens with the war on drugs. What happened with who was the most likely to be arrested, mass incarceration, how families were torn apart. And then we look back and we say, you know, people look at the African-American community and say, these are issues that are your fault. Well, it kind of is a part of, it's not kind of, it really is an issue about how do we characterize and stigmatize mm-hmm. and stereotype African-Americans. But these are pretty structural. These are things that are ingrained in our society and that we have to really think about how do we, moving forward, especially as our demographic changes, how do we figure out how to change that?
Okay, so, and we could spend the whole hour talking about those barriers. I mean, like you mm-hmm. just mentioned, you mentioned all those things, and I think a lot of our listeners already know what the barriers are. In this blueprint, what you're talking about, I mean, you're talking about let's start now.
Right.
Let's think about what are we doing for the short term, the long term? What are we doing in 10 years, 20 years? But what can we do to overcome the structural barriers, or at least break them down so that African Americans can have the same opportunities that other people have? And then at the end of the day, it all helps everybody because that makes a more robust economy and everybody is on the up. So when we talk about it, let's talk about education as the first part of what you guys are talking about in this study.
And so the only thing that I want to start with is I would suggest that not everybody knows. I think that they understand that they don't understand that there is an issue about the barriers that are stopping African Americans from achieving in society as the rest of us would. But let's look at education. When we say in our report that we would definitely like for graduation rates to increase by 15%, we know that African Americans who go to high schools that are predominantly African American, the graduation rate is 50%. But the graduation rate for whites who go to schools is 87%.
Okay.
And we know that when African Americans are in schools that are primarily African American, the resources that are targeted towards those schools decline. We have been fighting for the last 9 years with the state of Illinois about how do we equitably allocate resources to make sure that those that are under-resourced get those resources into those schools to make sure that those children get graduated.
Somewhere along the line, and I guess it would have been in the 90s, the school system determined at one point or another that, okay, we're not going to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, there was this thing where we're not going to be able to spread resources around. So they came up with selective enrollment and other lottery-type schools to bring people of different classes together so that they would have a more integrated opportunity and that graduation rate might go up. Is that not enough? Is that not working as evidence?
It's not working.
Why is it not working?
Because the resources that are being allocated to these schools, and if you look at the schools on the south and the west sides, and you look at the environments that our children are going to schools in, it's abominable. And we need to...
So they've been left behind.
No, absolutely.
There's still people going to those schools and they've been left behind.
They're not getting what they need to in order to achieve in this economy because education is the first step. And then jobs is the next step. So if I'm graduating from high school without the skills and resources that I need to get the jobs that I need,
you're already a step behind.
And we can't continue to have that happen. We can't lose another generation of children.
At some point or another, and I'd love to have continue the conversation on this show just about thinking about how to shift and how to improve schooling, mm-hmm. or just the way that Chicago does schools, because over the years, so many different politicians and people who are in charge of Chicago public schools have tried different methods to try to remove the structural barriers, but it just never works.
But the resources are when you have generational poverty, when you need kids that need extra resources with regard to social workers and all kinds of things that improve schooling, they're not there. So we're behind. That is the problem.
Right.
That is the issue.
It's interesting because, you know, I mean, all of the issues that are talked about in this study are issues that are on the forefront right now in the news.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see with Chicago Public Schools and CTU talking about teachers and cutbacks and principals getting their budgets. We're just off of the biggest closing of public schools in this country's history. Just what? 5 years ago?
Right.
It just doesn't seem that we are moving in a direction that is trying to rethink the way we do things. It almost feels like we just continue to roll it down the hill and hope for the best.
Well, what we know is what we're doing is not working. And so what's the most important thing about what we know is that we need to change what we're doing, and we need to be open to the discussion about how do we make sure that this very important segment of our economy, of our population, is taken care of as everybody else. When we think about what's equity, when we think about what people need to do, it's not about taking away anything from anyone else. It's about making sure that everybody has the same resources.
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. They just put out the blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. We're talking about it and talking about how structural barriers how we can get rid of structural barriers moving forward. And this plan kind of takes a look at that. We'll continue the conversation after the news with Rob Martyr here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 9 o'clock, Ron Burke's going to join us from the Active Transportation Alliance. We'll talk about bike lanes, construction, right-of-way, how to avoid tragedies like we saw earlier this week. A 21-year-old woman was hit by a semi-truck in a construction zone when a bike lane was essentially roadblocked. It's a terrible story, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight because each day the trucks line up at the same site. There was a follow-up story to it. It's kind of maddening. So we'll talk with Ron about what can be done in that situation. And then also Coach Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern Wildcats, talking about what that team, Chicago's Big Ten football team, can do to repeat the success of last year and maybe take a step forward, which would be pretty amazing since they were 10-2. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable for Northwestern. But right now we continue our conversation with Sherry Runner. She's the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, which is commemorating its 100th anniversary. And their plan, they just put out Blueprint for an Equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. It's so interesting. All this kind of stuff about, you know, identifying what the structural barriers are for this city, for the African-American community, but it's for all communities. There are some that are very specific to African-Americans. But to identify what it is, whatever that barrier is, and come up with solutions, that's a mighty task because it, for whatever reason, it includes change. People have to change. We have to shift paradigm. We have to think differently. I mean, it's more than just putting stats on a piece of paper.
No, and that's the most important thing about this plan is that it is a parallel plan. The work that goes on about handling those symptoms that we see every single day, the violence, the unemployment, the poverty, the generational poverty, what do we do about that? That has to continue. But at the same time, we have to recognize is that if we continue to do the same things that we have been doing for the last 50 to 100 years, we will not change things. And this is what's important. We've said right now, we have to put a line in the sand. We have to say 10 years from now, as every business would do, what are the goals that we want to achieve? How do we want to change this trajectory? This is not acceptable. Where are we going from here?
For you, you're a native of Chicago,
yes.
Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Native Chicagoan. I just think, you know, are we at a crisis point in the way that this is the worst that it's been? You know, I'm trying to think, you know, do we have to think in those kind of grand statements to get people's attention that we are at a crisis point, that it is red alert time for some of the areas and neighborhoods in the city?
We are at a crisis point, but we've been at a crisis point in several different neighborhoods across the city for years. Why it's a crisis point right now is because the violence is becoming an issue not just for those neighborhoods where most of the crime occurs, but because of the fact that it can seep out of those neighborhoods. And that all of a sudden creates a red flag for everybody that lives in
everybody.
The city.
Yeah.
And that points to the fact that when you have a significant portion of your population that is just surviving, maybe just surviving and not thriving, that the whole city can't thrive. And that's critical. That's crucial. And we have to live up to the fact that it's, you know, when you talk about this, when you think about the fact that it's, and if you say that it's just African Americans and what they're doing and what they're not doing, then you are belittling the fact that this is a part of the community and the society that you live in.
The whole city of Chicago.
The whole city of Chicago.
I'm interested because you mentioned a lot of those things, and I even at the beginning sort of said, well, you know, is the wealth gap widens, inequalities lead to poverty, which lead to problems like crime and violence. But these are all symptoms of something. They're all interconnected.
Yes, they are.
There's nothing that sort of leads to one or the other. They all seem to work in this strange, very negative ecosystem.
Well, I mean, think about it. You under-educate people who can't get jobs, who therefore cannot create wealth in their community. You think about the fact that the average net worth in the nation for African-American families is $5,000 after the recession. The average net worth for white families is $113,000. Now, in that average net worth, of course, are 1% people. But the fact of the matter that the divide is so wide.
It's so wide.
It's so wide. And that you have to think about what happens to people when they are working hard. And this is, they are working hard. And they need to be able to see a path out and not feel like they're disenfranchised.
One of the things that's rarely talked about when it comes to the violence, at least it hits in the media, is that it's not, you know, it's a very, they'll talk about it being in pocket neighborhoods.
Right.
This is where the crime and the violence and the shooting numbers that we see usually come from one or two areas. And it really is, when I talk about ecosystem, negative ecosystem, that's what's sort of, that's at play,
right.
As you just referenced. There is money being exchanged, and that's the protection of that money that's causing that violence.
That's exactly right. So if I can't get a job doing what is a part of the legal economy, I'm going to have to find a way to support my family in an illegal economy or a underground economy. And those underground and illegal economies are high risk, and they
people want to protect it.
Yes. And so we need to figure out a way, because what we hear every year when we do our legislative conference with the children that are out there that are a part of this, they say, I don't want to be a part of this. What I really want to do is have a job and move forward like everybody else. This is not something that is endemic to the African-American population. This is something that is endemic to the state of our economy and the state of poverty and the state of segregation and this lack of resources. So we know that if we change that narrative at the same time that we deal with the symptoms, we can absolutely change this.
And a lot of what's in the study, or the blueprint, I mean, it is the Urban League is for the economic, educational, and social progress of African Americans, but it is very relatable,
right,
to other groups. It almost falls along class lines in the way that we're really talking about poor, middle class, rich, working class, those kind of things, as opposed to just race.
Oh, absolutely. But the issue is that when you look at an African American, you can identify them as an African-American. And we have to, you know, so no matter what your status in life is, you know, you never know what they are. But you know you're African-American. Right. And so these issues are very central to the life of an African-American. And we see that all the time. And we need to start to have this conversation about race in a very straightforward way. It's hurtful. It's hard. People don't want to deal with it. But we need to deal with it to change the trajectory of our
Let's do it here. Let's do it on the show. We'll put some stuff together.
Let's do it.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think it is a hard conversation, but we should do it here.
Okay.
Okay. So what can what has to be in place for this plan to work? Is it straight up like the city of Chicago has to allocate resources, private investment? What is it about your plan that what's the fuel behind the blueprint?
Well, it's all of those things. Everybody has to get on board. Our corporate citizens need to be aware of their responsibility in making sure that the city of Chicago functions. Our government needs to be make sure that they are allocating resources to make sure that schools work, that investment is made in our communities. Our citizens need to be engaged and not just decide that African-American communities are written off. And African-American communities need to come to the table and say, we demand what we need to have in order to have our children and our communities thrive. So it's everybody coming to the table and saying that this is important and that we need to make sure that this happens.
It's interesting, too, because, when you talk about employment, one of the areas is youth work, and it's an area in Chicago that has seen better days when it comes to summer jobs, other places that's been cut away.
Right.
But you see a lot of companies that'll stand up and say, I will take this on, and they do it in an altruistic kind of way. And it feels to me that for this to take hold, for us to sort of start a new day in Chicago, it has to be less altruistic and more normal. If that makes sense. I don't know. I'm not using the right words, but it has to be more like that is just what we all do.
Right. Well, you know what we have to do is that, an entry-level employee that comes in your door who doesn't necessarily have all the skills that you may want, you're going to have to invest in that kid. And what we're going to really have to do is say, what investment we make in these communities, the return on investment is going to be way greater than what we're doing right now. And that's the most important thing.
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. The Blueprint for an Equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan, is on their website. They're commemorating their 100th anniversary this year. Sherry, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Coming up 9 o'clock, Pat Fitzgerald. How great is that? Coach Fitzgerald going to join us coming up after the 9:30 news. How cool, man. I didn't notice. I was doing all the prep for it. And, they were 10-2 last year. I forgot. It's like the news cycle is so fast.
Yeah.
The sports cycle, too, where you're just like, I couldn't tell you anything about last year's college football season. Who won? Alabama won?
Clemson?
Clemson beat Alabama?
LSU? One of those. Can't remember.
West Virginia? Is it Marshall? I think Marshall won it all last year.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, we could just do the next 5 minutes where we just name a bunch of mid-level colleges for the joke. Yeah, but Northwestern, they got up to 13 at one point. I forgot about it. And it's so exciting because WGN Radio here, we broadcast all the games on the radio. Dave Ennett.
Man,
it's awesome.
Adam Hogue on the sidelines.
It's so great. I tuned in a couple times last year, and I was like, this is awesome. It's top-notch. And to have Northwestern football on WGN Radio, it's a pretty big deal, especially since Northwestern. We'll see if they can make the jump. They have a tough schedule. But they had a tough schedule last year, and they just lost to Iowa and Michigan State. And that's one of the things I like about college football, the strange way that it's warped itself into if you lose once, you may be out.
Yeah, unless it's maybe in the first couple of games, then you can
and,
come
and
back.
And also your strength of schedule. Like some of the big schools, like you know, they have to play such big teams. Like on the if you're a school in the SEC, Southeastern Conference, you can afford to lose one. But like if Northwestern, it always blows my mind if you think this way, and the same for Illinois or any of those. If they run the table, if they go undefeated, because of the conference that they're in, they are automatically playing for a national championship. So it's not like it used to be where there'd be a bunch of, you know, white guys with stogies in the back of a room going, nah, I don't really like Northwestern. They're out. Like, because the Big Ten is such a big conference, you know, it's SEC, Big Ten, what is it, Big 12 maybe, Pac-10, ACC. Is there even a Big East anymore?
Big 12.
Yeah, the Big 12, I said that one. So that's about it. So if any of those, essentially, if you go undefeated in the Big Ten, which is arguably the biggest, the SEC and the Big Ten, you've got a chance. So if you're Northwestern, you know, I know it's far-fetched to say you're going to go undefeated in any sport, but the idea that if they ran the table, I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing that the Northwestern Wildcats here in Evanston, Illinois, if they won every game they played, they could be playing for national championship.
Yeah, of course.
The Big Ten Conference, by the way, has 14 teams. Just wanted to pass that along.
Is Appalachian State still in it? We're still in the Big Ten?
That could become a 15th team, depending on how much money we can extract from them.
Is St. Olaf still in the Big Ten, right?
There's still one double A, yeah.
One double A.
Right. I don't know how they do in the power rankings.
Right.
Is that true? There are 15 teams on the Big Ten?
No, 14, yeah.
Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, that looks like Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and Wisconsin.
Right. And then Johns Hopkins. That's in there. That's the last one.
14 teams. You have an East and West division.
Yeah, that's it. And I didn't see, I was looking at the schedule. They go on the road this year. Northwestern goes on the road to Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. On the road. Those are away games. They got a second year quarterback. I mean, it could happen, but those are teams that are usually there. Yeah. Ohio State, I saw something that said Ohio State is the number one winningest. Like they did a rank, like a weird kind of best team of all time. Ohio State coming in at number one.
You mean
we put all the computers together and the computers all decided.
No, I think that was done by the Associated Press. I think as long as they've been ranking teams, they jammed it in their supercomputer and they spit out that little thin strip of paper.
Right. and it's like the George Michael sports machine.
Who among us didn't watch that show religiously?
Show
I loved that show.
The fact that he would hit the button to start the highlight reel was probably the best. Best idea of all time from a production standpoint, and it showed that sportscasters could do more than one thing at a time.
And he always had his clipboard with him.
Let's consult the sports machine. Let's go to the sports machine.
Speaking of hitting buttons.
A download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, Coach Pat Fitzgerald from the Northwestern Wildcats, and join us to talk about their upcoming season. They got a new practice, at least field. The facility is still in renovation, but the field they're practicing on. And I saw some of the great pictures of it on Twitter and whatever, what have you, social media, what have you. And the skylines in the background looks real cool. So we'll talk with Coach Fitz. Coming up after 9:30. Well, we've been talking about this all week. The big story that we saw, I believe it was on Tuesday, maybe Monday, on Milwaukee Avenue, where a 20-year-old biker was struck and killed by a massive semi-truck on Milwaukee Avenue, where a development is going up and construction is forcing the bike lane back into traffic. There is, I wouldn't say it's protected at that point, but there's the green bike lane and there's a tremendous amount of traffic that is on Milwaukee Avenue, especially in rush hours of bikes and cars. And in this case, it forces traffic back into the street, and there's been concerns about this and more people. The DNA Info had a great piece about a lot of people were talking about that area and how difficult and how chaotic and how dangerous it was. And a semi-truck and hit a cyclist dead at the age of 20. On the line with us, Ron Burke. Ron Burke is the executive director for the Active Transportation Alliance. The great people over there. Ron, good to talk to you. How are you, my man?
I am doing well. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. And, you know, I called you because I wanted to talk about this, because I think what Pete and I had a hard time understanding is what happens in the right of way. What happens when construction or development or building a condo changes the flow of direction and traffic when it comes to cycling, pedestrians, and cars?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Under city law, right, the contractors doing that work are supposed to create essentially an adequate detour, right, so that people who need to go around that construction zone, whether they're on foot, on bike, or in a car for that matter, excuse me, they have the ability to get around there safely, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked to the city about this, the Department of Transportation, and, you know, I think they recognize how important it is. But, you know, frankly, it doesn't always happen with these contractors. Now, I think the folks are still gathering information about what happened, you know, with that tragedy on Milwaukee, to what extent the, you know, construction zone was a part of it. But, you know, clearly we know based on our own experiences, you may have had it yourself, Justin.
Right.
And even, you know, whether you're riding a bike, walking or driving, of course, if you're biking or walking, you're a little more exposed there. Right. But we've all seen it around Chicago. You know, obviously we need to maintain, repair our streets. There's no doubt about that. But we need to do so in a way that allows people to safely get around those zones. And, you know, frankly, some of the contractors aren't doing what they're supposed to.
I mean, that's and that really what it is interesting, because we've done so much in the city of Chicago to almost, you know, get bikers and drivers into a routine to understand where mm-hmm. they're supposed to be, where they're supposed to look, what the green means, what the protected area means when it's not protected. That's becoming more part and parcel to, you know, having any sort of transportation here in Chicago. So when it's disrupted like that, when a contractor doesn't follow the rule, and it can have disastrous results just because of the fact that everyone has been trained a certain way.
No, that's a good point. You know, there's a learning curve that we're all going through, right? That's what you're describing, where there's so many more bikes on the roads now, which is great. You know, needless to say, the Active Transportation Alliance is excited about that. Mm-hmm. Cycling is healthy. It's good, you know, good for the environment. Bikes do a lot less damage on the roads than our cars do, right? So there's a lot of reasons we like biking, but we're all getting used to there being more bikes on the roads. Cycling in Chicago is, you know, tripled or maybe even more than that in just the last 10 years. And over the last 3-4 years in particular, it's probably gone up even faster. Milwaukee Avenue during rush hour, especially that section that's just, you know, north of downtown, there are more bikes than cars a lot of times
That
street. So you're right. We're all kind of getting used to sharing the road in ways with a number of cyclists that we haven't had in the past. And you're right. This can kind of disrupt the routine. So it's all the more important that we, you know, take care of these construction zones and make them safe, not just for people on bikes, but we see the same issue, by the way, for people on foot. And as, you know, as tragic, of course, as these bike fatalities are, you know, there's roughly 8 times more people killed while walking compared to biking every year in Chicago.
Yeah, you send along some of those stats. In Chicago, for every person killed while riding a bike, 8 are killed while walking, 15 riding in a car. So about 5 bikes versus 40 pedestrians versus 80 car fatalities per year. Are you seeing, because of all of the awareness, because of the training, because of the education on this, are these numbers fluctuating at all? Are they going down? Are they going up? Are they staying the same?
Right. Well, with motor vehicle crashes, the numbers have definitely been coming down. Now, that has a lot to do with cars being designed more safely, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also, you know, streets and with pedestrian injuries and fatalities, the number has also been coming down pretty significantly, both in Chicago and the suburbs. Now, with bikes, on the other hand, it's been staying roughly flat. I mean, the numbers are kind of have been up and down or so the last 8 years, a little more, a little less. But at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, the number of people biking has just gone through the roof. So the fact that with the injuries and fatalities have stayed roughly flat for cycling, at the same time, you've got a lot of growth. The accident rate, if you will, the crash rate, the injury rate has gone down quite a bit. But I think that has a lot to do with the fact that cities are getting better, including Chicago, obviously, at just designing our streets to really be safer and calmer. Not that we're anywhere close to being there. I'm sure we've all experienced the heckling, the craziness on the street. But things like pedestrian countdown timers, bike lanes that kind of, they essentially create more order on the streets between, bikes and cars. We've seen the bump outs that kind of narrow the road and encourage motorists to drive more slowly and carefully. These are all things that are becoming more commonplace and that are contributing to this lower number of crashes and crash rate going down for bicyclists.
Ron, I know you to be an avid cyclist. When one of the community and there's an accident, there's a tragedy like this, and it happens in the way that it did, and we're still trying to figure out all the information from it.
Mm-hmm.
There has been some, emotion around it. The next day, DNA Info talked about an anonymous biker smashing a window of a truck. There is a lot of emotions ride high, especially when it comes to the days and weeks leading or after a tragedy like this.
Yeah, it's true. We run a crash support hotline, and I encourage folks to check that out if you've ever. If you've recently had a crash, for example, check it out. We can help you with support, know what to do, kind of connect you to an attorney if you need that. Just go to the Active Transportation Alliance website and look for that. But you're right, there's a lot of emotion, and it's true whether the person injured or killed was riding a bike, walking, or in a car for that matter, right? But the community of cyclists, as you point out, is especially tight-knit. I've unfortunately had this experience to, interact with a lot of families who've lost loved ones, and it's heart wrenching, and a lot of times they are young, like the woman, the person who passed away recently. So it's something, but here's what I think we really need to focus on, which is it doesn't have to be this way. I think we as a society sort of kind of essentially assume that, there's a lot of cars, there's a lot of people. There's going to be, accidents will happen, quote unquote. And we like to talk about crashes and injuries and fatalities that can be prevented, because if we design our streets better, and we're doing that better than we have in the past, enforce the traffic laws. When I say enforce, we're talking about for everyone. If anyone's being reckless, walking, biking, driving a car, we need to put that, put a stop to that, right? And then through education, all these steps can really lead to a lot fewer crashes, injuries, and fatalities. And, I think you're going to see the city of Chicago relatively soon introduce something that's referred to as a Vision Zero plan. This is a concept that comes from Europe, where if you do all these strategies correctly, you can get to the point over time, not overnight, but over time, where you can actually eliminate traffic fatalities. And they've seen this happen in some European cities. New York City is actually a few years ahead of us, and they've seen a real steep drop. Yeah, they've seen a big drop in the number of crashes and injuries and fatalities there. You can do it. It's relatively simple things, and not to say that's going to happen overnight and that we're going to completely eliminate crashes and injuries, but the more serious injuries and fatalities, if we do it right, we can mostly eliminate those over time.
It's so interesting too, being in, visiting Amsterdam and watching, the way that the cyclists and the trams and the cars all work together, and in this unspoken way that I was totally unfamiliar with. I was like, what's going to happen here? I'm going to be the fatality walking in the wrong spot. But you do see how, that is even more, it's more intense. It's double, it's triple the kind of cycling we have here in Chicago. And it seems to work.
Triple.
I mean, it just seems to work, yeah.
It does work, and it's largely because they've designed their streets to really function for everyone, people in cars as well as people walking and biking. They've done a great job of educating folks. They really enforce the traffic laws, which frankly doesn't happen much in Chicago. I mean, there's a real lax, enforcement's lax, and I'm not talking about just with motorists, but it's true with the, there's a few, let's face it, there's a portion of the population that tends to be careless and reckless, whether they're biking, walking, or driving. And, you know, those people need to get tickets. You know, we really need to be doing something about that. And too often that doesn't happen.
Ron Burke is the executive director of the Active Transportation Alliance. You got your big September, the Kickstand Classic Bike Challenge coming up at the end of September, right?
September 25th, Kickstand Classic Bike Challenge. We're trying to do essentially the bike version of a 5K running race, right?
I love it.
5Ks, anybody can go out and run, not anybody, but a lot of people can go out and run a 5K, right? But if you want to do a bike race, good luck, because you're mostly going to be with people on $10,000 bikes going 30 miles an hour, right?
So you got to wear a lot of micro.
So Kickstand Classic is for anyone. Come out. You know, you're gonna get a time, get to see how fast you went. You'll get an age group place. Maybe you'll win a medal. We'll have some beer afterwards from New Belgium. You know, it'll be a lot of fun. Check it out, kickstandclassic.org.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Ron. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm adding my own guitar. You like that? You see that? Like, I brought my own. It's like a fifth track there. That was a four track, and I brought my own. I slided right in there. Slid right in there. Slide guitar. This is how I like to do. You know, I like to envision myself as the fifth musician in the room, and I add on it. Just like every segment we do here on The Download, I like to talk about improving things. So I hear that song, and I improve it. I just add a little something extra. Chicago Bears had a little fourth in goal, and they couldn't do it. There's something, you know, Brian Hoyer, I follow Brian Hoyer because he played quarterback at Houston, and I followed him specifically and uniquely by watching Hard Knocks on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
No one else did, just me, last year, the Houston Texans. And he had, the Texans jersey is very sleek. It's cool, you know, it wraps around the pads. Mm-hmm, it's just, you know, they're a newer franchise. There is something about the Chicago Bears jersey, and I don't know if it's because it's, you know, bear down 50 years or whatever. He just looks like a square. Like, he just doesn't look like an athlete at all. He just looks like, here comes the guy. I've got my pads on. Okay, how do I? Like, Cutler's figured it out. It's really how you work the show, like the jersey over the shoulder pad.
Uh-huh.
You know, not to get too fashionista here, but he'll get a little bit closer to the thing, so he kind of tucks it in, so it almost looks right. That's the mark of a seasoned professional. But Hoyer, he lets the sleeves kind of hang down.
Just like sleeves?
Like, so it's just, it looks like the players that are in the Football Follies.
They're playing like midget football.
Like, you know, like the Football Follies you'd get with the Sports Illustrated phone when you'd get a subscription in the 80s. And then you'd get like these random, I don't even think they're from the NFL. They're just like random off-the-shelf Football Follies. That is what Brian Hoyer looks like. He looks like the quarterback's like, oh, I'm trying to catch it, but I'm kicking it.
Well, I happened to look up, and I saw he threw I don't know if it was his first pass, but he threw an interception, a really horrible pass.
Yeah, he doesn't look so hot, but then again, who cares?
What's the score?
They're losing 23-11. Oh, I just ruined it. I was taping it.
Oh, spoiler.
Spoiler alert to myself. Yeah. They're losing 23-11. They had a good start somewhere in there, and I don't know if it was the second team or third team. I have some texters who are watching the game. Let me know. They gave up a slew of points real quick, and I don't know if that was on the first team defense or the second team defense.
Yeah.
The third team defense, which is in now, Leonard Floyd and Jonathan Bullard. Is it Jonathan Bullard? The kid from Florida that they picked in the second round? So Floyd
right,
in the first one, Bullard in the second one. Is it Bullard? I think it's Bullard. I could be wrong, but I think that's his name. They were both in, and they combined on a sack, and it was lights out.
They looked good.
I actually thought it was and this is how good they looked. I thought it was a sack. I just looked at it because we were in the middle of the segment, and it looked as if the Bears were backpedaling into their quarterback. I thought the Patriots got the sack. That's how fast
Wow.
The Bears defenders look, because I was like, ah, oh, they sacked Hoyer. And I'm like, oh, wait, we're on defense. I mean, they got there fast.
Nice.
Both of them got there like that. That's always good to see. So, interesting convo there with Ron Burke. So essentially what I'm gathering is that there could be some grounds for, if you're a contractor or developer and you're building one of these mega condos on Milwaukee, you're on the hook to make that bike lane
passable
or usable. You can't just block the bike lane.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know exactly, if this is exactly where that happened, where Elston and Chicago and Milwaukee kind of come together in that area, there's a construction, and I'm not sure exactly where it was, but there's one there that cuts the bike lane off, and then the trucks line up and they double park right there to drop stuff off. It's a mess for traffic, for cars, and there's so many cyclists that are coming in from Milwaukee, and they get just almost flushed right into that mess.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's like World War Z. You know, it's not the zombie attack part of World War Z. It's the traffic that is caused by the zombie attack that's way up there. Where you're like, what's happening up there? Why are these cars moving? It's that kind. So it's not the actual zombie attack.
Right.
It's the traffic from the zombie attack. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, we're only 2 weeks away from college football starting back up, and we here at WGN Radio are excited to bring back the Northwestern Wildcats, broadcast here every Saturday. Can't wait. The Cats have been, I mean, what a great run last year. 10-2 in the regular season, losing to Tennessee in the Outback Bowl. But the team finished ranked number 23 by the AP. There was a point when the Cats were ranked 13th. It was the first time they ever did that since the year 2000. What can we expect from them this year? Well, many project them starting in the top 25. And, you know, it's not every day that a star linebacker gets to come back and be a successful head coach, but that's exactly what has happened to my next guest, Northwestern football head coach Pat Fitzgerald. Coach Fitzgerald, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
So let's talk first. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, the new practice field looks great. How's it feel for the team to be working in the new facility? I mean, I know you're working on the whole facilities there, but practicing on the new field.
Yeah, it's been just terrific. And, you know, the view is just something spectacular. When we get everything finalized here in the near future, it's going to be just amazing, not only for our program, but, you know, really for the full integration of our entire campus. So exciting times, and enjoying Kenosha right now, but looking forward to getting back and being in those facilities.
For you in Kenosha, when you're doing camp with your team, what are you looking for with the kids? I mean, is it something where you want, you know, your team, your offense and your defense to be in sync, or are you specifically looking at individual matchups, things of that nature?
Well, this is when the team really comes together. You know, we have 1 week in Evanston that we go through what's called the acclimation period, where it's 5 one-a-day practices. And then we're basically up here for 10 days, and we're out of our comfort zones. You know, we're all living in dorms, and our coaches away from their families. I mean, the list goes on. And it gives us an opportunity, you know, to come together in a football-only environment that is really something special and kind of unique to football. So, you know, we really enjoy it. It's a grind for the guys. There's no question about that. It's a grind for us as coaches, especially the older that I get, but it's a blast coming together, and so far so good throughout the week.
Talk about the expectation of possibly being ranked and ending the season last year. I mean, you guys are now not in that familiar sort of underdog role. People are going to be seeing you coming, especially in the first couple of weeks when you play some teams that are not conference teams. Do you have to instill that in the team? Do you have to let the kids know that it's not going to be like it has been in the past because of your past successes?
Well, we try to focus on what we can control. And, you know, really it's obviously the whole process that goes through being a college football player. And, you know, every team is born in January, and you know, as we went through our winter workouts during that phase, I thought we had great maturity. I thought the guys came back with a chip on their shoulder based on the way we finished the season and not a very good humor. And we carried that momentum into spring practice, and I thought we really got after it. I thought we improved in a lot of areas, but still felt like we had to put some more pieces into the puzzle together, and then brought the freshmen in here over the summer, and they were in pretty darn good shape. And now as we get to, you know, kind of halfway through camp, you know, we'll start to put our focus not only into game prep, but still continue, you know, for the opener, but still continue to put our prep on ourselves and how we're performing, you know, the things that you need to do to be prepared for practice every day, and putting the right mental and physical habits together to create that to be your edge. And then when you go out and play, you got to trust yourself and go do those things. So, you know, our process is really focused inward. It's focused on continual improvement. And if we can do that, I think we'll be prepared for every game.
Coach, when you're at the college levels, how much of that discipline you talk about, that mental and physical discipline, how much of that has been instilled in high school and how much of it hasn't? Meaning, you know, if you get to the pros and you're not mentally prepared for the game, you're in trouble. But I would assume a lot of freshmen and sophomore, they're learning how to play football, or they're learning to play at this level.
Yeah, there's definitely a learning curve. And, you know, and for most guys that play football, they've typically gone through that same learning curve when they were in high school, you know, and going from eighth grade to high school football. So similar learning curve, just a little bit steeper. But, you know, more and more, you know, we try to do a great job throughout the process of teaching our guys, you know, as they're matriculating into the program, kind of what the expectations are, to make sure they do the best job they can to at least be prepared somewhat for the opportunity once they get there.
What would you say is the characteristics of the Cats this year? I mean, what do you want them to be? I mean, there's been some years where you guys have, even before your time and even with you, they've been throwing the ball around and coming from behind, and there have been some years where the defense shuts it down. What is the makeup, the characteristics of the Cats this year?
Well, you know, coming off of 10 wins and having as much success as we've had in program history, you know, you got to build upon that, and that's what we've tried to do. We've gotten a lot stronger in the weight room. We've I think added great depth across the board, and now it's, you know, our identity is kind of to be determined. But if practice is any indication, I think we're going to continue to be a team that is very physical, running the football. I believe, based on what I've seen so far, we're going to be more consistent in the passing game and throw it, catch it better, and hopefully be more explosive that way. And then defensively, you know, I think we've got really good team speed and really good depth. We've just got to continue to see exactly how we want to put each piece on the field. So a lot of challenges ahead of us, but still I like the pieces that we have. But I think our identity is going to be a physical, tough team that gives great effort and I think plays real good team football.
One of the tough spots this in camp has been the loss of Keith Watkins, the corner. Someone you were really high on, and I know you like very much. How is the team going to move forward without him? He's out for the year with a knee injury.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that happened week one for Keith, and it was a non-contact. He just got his legs tangled up with a guy. A tough deal for Keith individually. And, you know, his attitude has just been amazing. He's been a great teammate, you know, in the ear of all the other corners, and just doing a great job. So I'm very proud of him for that. But, you know, one man's issue or one man's injury is another man's opportunity. And, you know, that's football. That's life. Mm-hmm. And you've got to move on if you want to be successful. And, you know, we've got 5-6 guys that are competing for that position. And, you know, that'll play itself out. But I like our depth. And it's going to be, like I said, some guys' opportunities now as we move forward.
It's interesting because once you get to the NFL level, some of these kids, you know, they get a knee injury, an ankle injury, they're out for the year. That's football. I mean, that's the name of the game now. You know, when a kid gets excited about playing for you and is ready to go and has something like this happen where it's a non-contact injury, I mean, it is a life lesson. This could be, I'm not sure in Keith's situation, but this could be a first-time injury, first time you're dealing with this kind of disappointment. As a coach, do you have to go further than say, like an NFL coach is like, well, next up, and sort of, you know, go through the motions with a kid about how to deal with adversity?
Yeah, great question. I don't, you know, it's unfortunately a little bit different at the next level. You know, on Sunday, it's obviously you're bringing probably another player onto your roster. Here, you know, your roster in college football is already set as you go into the season. So, yeah, there's no doubt. And our relationships are so deep with our players that, you know, it just breaks your heart anytime you see a young person go through an injury, anytime you see somebody face any sort of adversity. But, you know, quite frankly, that's where I really feel like my role and the role of college coaches, that's where we step in. It's different than just a transactional relationship. It's very, very similar to high school, except these guys are all away from home. And, you know, it's a relationship that I absolutely love and adore, and it just breaks my heart every time I see one of our guys go through this. But it's my job to help them out, make sure we've got the right resources for them, and do everything we can to help them be stronger as they come out of the injury.
making a transition from player to coach, which you've done in the last decade, you know, is that something you had to learn to do? Is that something that as the coach you'd learn to develop those relationships with the kids, especially when maybe they come up with an injury?
Well, as an assistant coach, you know, you're on the front line, so to speak. So I had done that for a number of years before I became the head coach. And it's very different when you're managing 12, 15 players compared to managing the whole squad.
Right.
So, there's definitely an evolution there. But, you know, the way recruiting is, I'm very active in the recruiting process of all of our players. I've been in most, if not all, their living rooms and with their families. And, you know, it's obviously challenging anytime you go through that. But I think, you know, you typically build trust through building genuine relationships. And I believe we've got really, really rock solid trust here in our program.
All right, so this is going to be a year where there's a lot of expectations on you guys after such a great year last year. And this year you've got three games in which you go on the road. You go on the road to Iowa. You go on the road to Ohio State. You go on the road to, I forget the third play, another huge, Michigan State. When you're talking about kids who, like right now, you're in Kenosha, you're getting them used to the environment of being together. I mean, that's nationwide football when you're playing at Ohio State, at Ohio Stadium. I mean, how do you get the kids ready for that kind of environment, that kind of game, that kind of, the bright lights?
Sure. Well, you know, that's why you play Big Ten football. That's why you go to Northwestern. You want these types of opportunities, and that's what they are. They're great opportunities for our guys individually, us collectively as a team, and obviously for our program. And, you know, those games aren't until October. So, you know, for those games to be significant, we've got to handle our business in the games prior to that. And we've got four at home, and we need to fill Ryan Field up and have a great environment. You know, we open up the season with Western Michigan, as predicted to win the Mid-American Conference. And, you know, then Illinois State, the team that was at the quarterfinals a year ago and semifinal or into the national championship game 2 years ago. And then Duke, who, you know, under Coach Cutcliffe, has done a great job and been to bowl games down numerous years that we had the fortune to go down there and beat a year ago, and then we won a hard-fought game against Nebraska. There's the first four out the gate. I think we've got enough right in front of us.
You'll have to come back and talk about those games. You know, having such success at Northwestern as a player, as a linebacker, to now having success as a coach, does it mean more for you since you played at Northwestern? And also the second question I'd have on that is, does it feel more? I mean, do you feel more comfortable in the sense that you've been in so many different positions with this university?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I understand and know my role, and I'm very humbled to have it, to say the least. And, you know, with that comes great responsibility. And, you know, the young men that I get the privilege to be around every day, it's very, very special, and I'm very thankful for them. And same thing for our entire staff, our coaching staff and support staff. It's a great honor. And with that being said, I can't speak for the other, you know, 64 Power Five head coaches, but there's something special about being at your alma mater. It definitely means a lot when, you don your alma mater's gear and you go out there to represent your school. Those are all fun things to talk about on interviews, but it's so funny when you get into the grind of the day-to-day. It never really comes across your mind. You just do your job to the best of your ability.
All right, last question. You guys are Chicago's Big Ten team. That's how you've marketed. And we've seen another school here in this state hire a former Chicago Bear coach to lead it and almost, enter the market again. Do you feel like there's any competition for Chicago's Big Ten team when with other schools like the Illini?
Well, we've got a trademark, so there can't be anything that, as far as competition. So let's be crystal clear on that, A. And then B, you know, I know from our practice fields, we can see the skyline. I'm not sure about for them, but I've got great respect for Coach Smith and, you know, their program. And I think that's great for fans and for marketing. But, again, it's to us, it's about location and can respect the fact that they have a lot of alums, but, I can't change the fact that their school is located in Central Illinois. So it's, We're not saying it in reverse. I guess I'll just say that.
That's good.
So, but it's all good. It's all fun. It's college football, and that's what's exciting about this time of the year. It's put on your purple and white, or put on your alma mater school colors, and you know you're gonna always be proud of where you went to college if they've got a college football team. And it's just a blast, and it's just awesome to be a part of it. And hopefully, we'll continue to graduate our guys at 100%. Have them be prepared for life and be prepared to be productive in their communities and for their families. And hopefully we coach them to be great football players, opportunity to go to the NFL, but more importantly, just be prepared for life and represent themselves, family, and our program the right way. So it's exciting times. Looking forward to the opener, but 2 more weeks before we get going.
All right. Well said. 2 weeks until Northwestern hosts Western Michigan on September 3rd. Coach Pat Fitzgerald, thanks so much for taking some time out, and go Cats.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks to all of our great fans. We'll see you in a few weeks from Ryan Field. Go Cats. Bye-bye.
This is a download here, 720 WGN Chicago, having some fun tonight. Coming up next, Swap Meet, Greg Flamm in the building. We are going to evaluate your Chicago memorabilia, 312-981-7200. Call us up and share with us something that you, or just brag. Brag about something cool you have. Last week, there was some really cool stuff. I mean, whether it be memorabilia, sports memorabilia, collected coins, maybe you have some WGN radio memorabilia. Seen that circle around. Whatever you think you might have from, you know, collecting or possibly inheriting, let us know. 312-981-7200. Greg will tell you if it's worth anything. You may be sitting on something where you're like, oh, I got this old rag. I got this snot rag. Oh, that's a famous snot rag. That could get you $700 for that. Something like that. 312-981-7200. This is arguably becoming one of my favorite segments of the week, just for the fact that we get to hear from great listeners of the download who have some amazing stuff. And it's really a big part of who we are, is what we take with us. You know, they always say you can't take it with you when you die. Yeah, but you can take it with you till you die. We're pretty good with that, right? It's a good tagline for this. You can't take it with you? Well, you can take it with you till you die. Could be fun. We could put up postcards, make a poster with Greg holding a box of junk like it's American Pickers or something like that. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. 312-981-7200. We'll do that coming up after the 10 o'clock news. Greg also brings stuff in. That's always fun. You doing an Aaron Waters show this weekend?
We usually ride our bikes up, you know, up like near Montrose towards the end. You know, we don't want to get down in the junk where it gets really crowded. But
yeah, right.
Yeah, we go up. We usually go there every year.
Today I was at the Cubs game, went to Wrigley Field, although I bailed by the sixth inning. So I had to get here and prep.
Yeah.
Not because I was sick and tired of the heat and, oh, a fair weather fan. No, I had to get here and get ready for the show.
Right.
You got to get ready for the show. I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the show, when they were doing the Star Spangled Banner, they had a bunch of people parachute onto the field. They do that all the time? You're shaking your head? That's something they do?
No, but I was watching.
Oh, really?
And I saw.
They didn't sink it. I know it's hard. I know it's hard to jump out of a plane and sync it up perfectly, but I think they do that at bigger events. These guys were off in their timing.
Oh,
and coming down. You know, like the big one with the, or I mean, they were coming down during the national anthem, which was kind of weird because you would stop in the middle of the anthem of, you know, holding your hand over your, wherever you hold it.
Yeah.
And then have to cheer because the guy landed successfully.
Yeah, that's weird.
And the bombs burst in. Oh, yeah. You made it. You know, he'd get a cheer, like in the middle of the anthem. The
anthem? Poor Wayne
Nesper.
Yeah, after
Gabby,
yeah,
exactly.
It.
After Gabby Douglas, I don't want cameras on me. You know, you want to honor your country. You know, I'm like, thanks for jumping out of an airplane. If you would have timed it better, I'd have given you some applause. But we're in the middle of the anthem. And then at the end, like, it was over. We're like, you know, hey, home of the brave. And then, like, maybe, like, 2 minutes later, the guy comes down with a big flag. You know?
He's late. Oh, man.
But then I was like, and then I just returned to a friend. I'm like, well, isn't it a little sacrilege for the flag to hit the ground?
It is.
So this guy's coming with a huge American flag. I mean, the one that it makes everyone just start cheering because the guy is holding it while he's trying to not land on the upper deck. And he lands in the middle of the field, And when he hits, the flag comes down and just turn, you know, just hits the ground, and then just kind of drag it off. And I'm like, maybe it's not a real flag, but it is, just bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they...
I mean, it was somebody whose job it was to do the flag every day at St. Patricia's Grammar School.
Right.
I took that seriously. You cannot drop that flag.
You would be the guy who'd get down to the wall at Wrigley and be like, hey, pick that up.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Rick Monday on him. So we're there, but they were. I was watching a little bit of the game. They were talking about the Jets going by. Were there? Did you see anything?
No, I didn't see any Jets. You just heard them, and it was only in the first and second inning, and then it was over. So I was like, "This is." I thought it was going to be the whole game.
Because normally it's one of my favorite weekends to go to Wrigley Field when I'm picking tickets.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday,
I'll go. Yeah, you know, because they usually the Jets like fly overhead, and it's really cool and patriotic and.
I haven't been to Wrigley. I went to Wrigley one time earlier this year, but I kind of made fun of it in the carryout at the top. Chris Bryant's hitting home runs, and they're like, "Whoop, there it is! Whoop, there it is!" I'm like, "What are we? Are we using the Jock Jam CD? Like, it just seems like that's the song." So Wrigley Field for all these years had an organ, and they didn't have that, and they finally made the transition to that, and they're like, "Ah, Jock Jams." Like, you can't come up with something a little bit more progressive or interesting or new or not 1988?
I mean, you joked about it in the carry. That was really funny. I think you're right. I think since they had to fire the DJ, they don't have a DJ, so they were, like, scrambling. Yeah. And I think they were searching around for a CD. They found Jock Jams. They put it in, and they just like, kind of, you know, like, all right, what do you think?
They played the Gary Glitter track, and they're like, no, he's in jail. You can't do that. We can't do anything. So ridiculous. I mean,
let's get ready to
exactly,
run!
Exactly. Here come your Chicago Cubs.
No.
It's got to, like I said, it's got to be something a little bit more like Skrillex.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we need some Skrillex up at Wrigley. I don't even know what Skrillex is, but it seems like that would be the kind of music that would be in it. Like, I felt really Addison Russell had Chance the Rapper as his walk up. Right? And I was like, there you go.
The walk up music, they're on point for the most part, except for Time of La Stella.
What's the Stella's?
He has the, you know, the Jersey Boy soundtrack, you know.
He does not.
Oh, what a night. Late December back in, you know, because he's from Jersey. And then you got, like, you know, Future and Drake, and then, you know.
Right.
Match Caesar has a Renegade.
And then Javi Baez has got Informer. So it works. It works itself out. I love the music. It's a download here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday night, so it's time for Swap Meet. We all own something that connects us to this great city. Whether it's memorabilia or souvenir, we go out of our way to keep it from the trash bin, and when we move, we take good care to preserve it. It's not junk. It's Chicago history. What do you have? What do you have? What do you have? Tonight, it's time for the swap meet. It's like Chicago Antique Roadshow. You call in and impress us with what you got, and we tell you if it's worth anything. 312-981-7200. It's a chance to brag about the things we've collected over the years. It really is just a chance to brag. 312-981-7200, and I feel like we just those moments are fleeting.
Right,
the brag moments. Greg Flam in studio. He goes by the name DuPage Picker, estate sales, digital salesman. What would you call yourself?
Yeah, online sales, I guess.
Online sales, the reseller.
Thanks for having me again, Justin.
That could be your that could be like your nickname, the reseller.
Yeah, that's a possible. We have to do a whole
a brand
picnic
it.
Thing
yeah.
with that.
Exactly. Do a picnic thing,
we'll
brand
do a,
it.
We'll
some,
do a two-minute segment.
A two-minute picnic. 312-981-7200. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me. It's always fun. Highlight of my week, you know, just to come in here and
mine
talk
too,
with everyone. And
all right, so how was the week? Each week I ask you, like, how was your week? Because all week you're working different flea markets.
Yeah, it's usually Wednesday sales. Through Saturday, a bunch of garage sales, estate sales, flea markets. The rain has really been weird lately. It's kind of the last 2 weeks been whatever, Friday, Saturday, so it's kind of hampered some sales. But I did manage to find some stuff last weekend, and I guess we can go over
all
that.
All right, let's do it. This is the beginning. What do you got in studio?
Okay, so since we get a lot of calls about the Bears posters, I brought in one from I think it's 86, 87 defense. there.
Oh, yeah, it's a locker room one.
Yeah, and I came across a stack of Chicago Bears media guides.
Yeah, you're from like my dad.
From 95 to 2000. I think I got all 8 of them or 7 of them for like $4.
So those are vintage. I feel every time I see my dad, he's like, hey, I got a media guide for the Bears from 2004. I'm like, I don't need it.
Yeah, and you know, pricing them online, they go for about $8 or $9 a piece. I got all of them for $4, so, you know, not bad.
Not bad. That's a classic poster, too.
That poster is really
nice. That's got a lot of defense.
A lot of good names on that one.
Yeah.
I brought in a 1972 White Sox poster that was put out by Berwyn Bank. I can't remember the name. Olympic Savings and Loan.
Olympic Savings
and Loan. And the best thing about this is that the whole center of the picture is like girls. I don't know if they had back girls back then.
Hold it up for me.
Yeah, hold on.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. What is that?
In the center, you got, you know.
It's just like girls in
so I don't know if it's people from the bank and, you know, he just kind of favored them and put them in there. But it's got, like, you know, the auto pen signatures for the whole team, which is really cool. And I haven't seen this one too often. So this one, and the funny thing is like, the picture of the Sox in there.
They actually
it's like
a fight.
It's like a fight scene. Yeah. It's not even like a
That's so weird. It's
home
like
run
that would
hitting.
Be, yeah, so. That would be, like, the big shot, like a Sammy Sosa home run. But
and
instead,
it looks
it's
like a Bill Mountain there. Bill Mountain's up here. But this looks like
maybe
this
looks like a brawl. Like, there's a brawl at midfield.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, and that's the picture they use in this poster, right? So I get a kick out of every time I look at it. It's Berwyn, you know, it's all girls in the middle and –
a lot of
anyway,
highlights
but yeah,
from the 72
it's cool.
Team,
I like that.
Right?
My brother actually found this one.
That's great.
But I snagged it from him. And I have a 1971 program from the Cubs. Filled out, but it's not in the best condition. They played the Pittsburgh Pirates for this game. I have a 89 Cubs pennant, and that's on the Chicago Skyway map back when it was like the phone numbers were like Hudson 2, you know, whatever.
Wow.
They're pre, you know, area code.
And then
and
you
I think
also...
it went, you know, when they opened it.
You also have the Hollywood
programs
that are the guides to where the Hollywood stars
Yeah, homes of the stars, yeah, from
what,
L.A.
What year is that? Like
I think 70s? They're 78, 79. And that's just like my personal thing. I just like pick it up.
Yeah,
you know,
I need to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
Just when I go, I'm going to L.A.
Yeah,
in a week and a half, I want to see if those people still live there. And go to the tutor and be like, excuse me.
All right.
Is the guy from Chips?
Yeah, that's
awesome. Second guy from Chips still live here?
Right. That's awesome.
All right, 312-981-7200. We got some people on the line already, some texts coming in. Why don't we get right to it before we hit our first break? Why don't we go to Arlena? Arlena, is that right, Arlena?
Yeah, it's really Darlena, but...
Oh, Darlena. Sorry about that. Darlena. All right, Darlena, what do you have?
I have a little scale for weighing the mail. For weighing mail, it's probably 5 inches in the box. And I wonder if he's familiar with that.
Okay, so it's in the box, meaning you don't use it?
No, I bought it at auction.
Oh, okay. Do you know what year approximately? Or
I think probably 80 years old.
Wow.
Ooh.
And it's still in the box. That's cool. I mean, can you maybe text us a picture or we can?
Oh, I can't.
Oh, that's all right. Do you know where did you got it in an estate sale? You said.
Well, at auction probably.
Auction.
Estate sale.
Okay.
I wonder if he's familiar with anything like that.
Not really, but, you know, obviously if it's in the box, anything that old in the box is usually worth something. Obviously, if I could see a picture, that would help quite a bit. But, yeah, I still would look that up. I would have, if you can't do it, have a family member or friend look that up. Yeah.
Okay. What about a Ouija board?
Oh, my God. I personally I walk past them because I'm just superstitious that way. But I know people who, you know, buy them as soon as they can see them.
Can you make money off of Ouija boards? Are
they do. They sell,
kind of thing?
You know, anywhere from 30 and up, you know, depending on what year, because they obviously made it every year. I think it was Parker Brothers.
Pardon?
Was it Parker Brothers or which brand? Do you know which one?
It's pretty old.
Yeah.
My aunt told me they used to sit upstairs at the old farmhouse and play.
Yeah. I won't. I've heard too many stories.
Darlena,
that
scares the living bejesus out of me. The farmhouse Ouija board scene. That's hey.
Yeah, they had a good time doing it.
As long as whoever you conjure up goes when you're done, you know.
How would I sell that?
They're all over eBay, and you could probably find your exact one, and you know, and then just make sure you click the sold column to see what they actually sold for, because, you know, like I said before, anyone could ask for any amount for any item, but you want to just double check the sold column to make sure what they're actually selling for.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I'm sorry, I'm hogging the time.
That's all right.
A slits. bracelets, beer pitcher, and I also have a mug.
And how old is that? What?
Where, probably 50 or more.
Yeah, that would sell. I'd have to probably say $20 for all of that, maybe 20 to 30. And because it's probably, is it glass or is it plastic?
It's ceramic.
Ceramic, yeah. It's going to be kind of heavy to ship, so that's another thing you got to consider, the shipping costs with that. So,
all right,
20 to 30 maybe on that.
Sounds good. Thanks, Darlena.
Okay, thank you, dear.
Thank you.
All right. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. People are on the line here. 312-981-7200. We got some texts. We got some old license plates I want to look at. 312-981-7200. We're playing Swap Meet with Greg Flamm. Stay with us. All right, it's the Swap Meet Thursday night here on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200. You got some Chicago memorabilia, some Chicago antiques, some Chicago junk that you would like to brag about. It's like, you know, because I don't want it to just be things that you think you have value of. It's got to be cool stuff. Like, when we first started this, I talked about that skeleton. I have the skeleton key
right. That
opens any door on the CTA. I can't sell that for anything. Maybe I could. I could sell to the Russians, you know?
Right.
We would like that key.
Right.
And I could sell it and it would be a big espionage thing, but I doubt they want it. Mm-hmm. I don't even think it works anymore. But my point being that it doesn't have to only be about things that you might want to sell. I want to hear about the cool stuff you're
right,
bragging
the backstory,
about.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, like I want to tell you about the baseball I caught or the signature I got or I never washed my hand.
Someone shook
your
hand.
Yeah, exactly. I met the bass player for Styx, and I never washed my hand. Pick one of those.
Awesome.
312-981-7200. Let's go to John. John, what do you got, John?
Well, you said you wanted cool stuff, so
yeah.
I was going to originally talk about an antique curio cabinet I have,
okay.
But I was thinking when I was on the line, if you're looking about for cool stuff, I have a leather change purse from the Eastland.
The boat,
the disaster in the Chicago River.
That is definitely Chicago history there, that's for sure.
Yes, it's a small leather change purse, and it's got, you know, the Eastland on it.
That is very cool.
And I've always thought that was kind of cool.
That is.
You know, definitely. Another thing, John, I would tell you, that the Eastland, the bodies that came out of that wreck were taken to a makeshift morgue on the west side in the West Loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
On Washington and I think either Morgan or Aberdeen. Can you name where that is and what it is now?
Ooh.
I'll just tell you. It's Harpo Studios, Oprah Winfrey's studio that she did her show in, is where it used to be a warehouse where the bodies were. The morgue were laid out. It was a makeshift morgue for the
Yeah, you'll always hear the haunted stories
the
around Halloween.
And that's what I was going to say, is that they're tearing that down.
Wow.
And they're making it like super, that's the headquarters for McDonald's.
Wow.
And like, talk about like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near that.
I can't
man.
Repeat the stories, but I heard a couple stories about someone said they hear noises in Harpo Studios when it was.
Yeah,
they would hear,
right. That's what that was. And Oprah did some stories on that.
Yeah.
Like she did something for a show, but now they're.
They're
getting rid of it, you know.
We'll see.
That's
now
like
that
a,
they're,
it's got poltergeist written all over it.
Yep.
All right, John, what's the antique cabinet? Tell me about the antique cabinet.
Well, it was handed down from my mother through her parents, and then I know it's got to be over 100 years old. It's a wooden china cabinet, and it's got concave glass on the sides and, you know, clear glass in the front, and the door opens in front, and there's probably about 6 shelves in there. It might be about 6.5 feet tall, and it's got like talons or bare feet for the legs.
Okay,
that it stands on.
Yeah, that's.
And I was just wondering how far back something like that goes.
Oh man, I couldn't tell you, but I know if you took a picture and brought it into almost any antique shop, they'd be able to help you.
That's what I mean. You know, I John, I mentioned this before, but there's a lot of these old antique shops. It used to be on Belmont, over on in sort of West Roscoe Village.
Yeah.
But then there also is a place I went to that was like a really nice, I got a nice little armoire where I put my TV on that used to be like a handkerchief sort of armoire.
Okay.
That they turned in, they like sanded it down and, mm-hmm. and charged me like six times what it probably was worth.
Okay.
But the point being that those are all over Andersonville and Edgewater.
Right. Yeah, and they pick those and charge.
And they charge tons. So you
yeah,
might be able
times
to, yeah,
more than
I was
going
to say, you might what, either get in with that.
Sorry, what area are you in, John? I can maybe point you somewhere.
I'm from the Berwyn area.
Okay, yeah, you're nearby all along 31st Street. There's like seven antique shops between like LaGrange and Wolf in that area off of 31st.
Yes, so I know exactly.
Yeah, if
you
just
about.
Take a couple pictures, they'll be able to tell you know, there.
All right, thanks, John. Thanks for that.
Yep.
It's awesome on the first, too. Let's go to Scott. Yep. Scott, you're the one who texts the pictures of the license plates. What's the story on this?
Yeah. Well, I bought them at a garage sale, old guy, and of course they're from Berwyn,
yeah,
so this must
Berwyn.
Be the theme tonight, Berwyn.
Yeah, right. It's funny how that works.
And it's two, you know, both, I guess, a front and rear.
That's
and
good.
1931 and 1932. And they've also got the, if you notice on a picture, they've got the Berwyn tag. So it's not just a plain old license plate. It's actually got the tag. And one of the tags says, it says play good for or only 35 miles an hour or something like that.
Yeah, it's got like a yeah.
Right. Well, first off, it's good that you have both. That definitely helps. Again, if you're not familiar, you know, with eBay, maybe have a family member or friend, but those are definitely worth something.
They are. They're worth something.
Oh yeah, yeah. And especially in pairs and old. The older, you know, the better.
Who's
up until
that?
About the
Who's
70s.
Buying that stuff?
People collect that. People want, I know people who want a pair from every state, or they do even every year. You know,
wow.
They go
well,
way
know,
back
I
to the leather like, plates that used to be leather.
If you're going to some restaurants, like I think it's a barbecue joint, Dave's or something like that.
Okay.
They'll have their walls.
Right.
You know, like in the bathroom and on the way to the bathroom and all that,
oh,
they'll
yeah.
have their walls covered with license plates.
Right, yeah.
You know, like
restaurant decor, yeah.
Stuff.
They don't, and they don't even care what they really have unless they're really
could you just go straight to that restaurant and be like, hey, you want some license plates? Or they'll just no.
I actually asked, I was at one and I asked them, but it was in Bolingbrook. And they really didn't seem too interested in it. And I said, well, maybe I'll go to the one over in like Riverside, which is right across the street from Berwyn.
Yeah, you probably have better luck like with a mom-and-pop restaurant. They'd probably be more interested in working out a deal right there.
Yeah.
You know, the chains or something like that, you know, they go through corporate to buy that stuff. So.
Right.
Yeah,
those
like
snobs.
And all that.
Those snobs
right.
in Bolingbrook.
Freaking snobs.
Yeah, but look it up, though. You got something cool.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Interesting. Let's go to Robert. Robert, what do you got, Robert?
Yeah, I got a, it's prior to World War II, when a Ford salesman's kit, which I've got, it has the films and the phonograph records.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it shows the line of Ford cars, and it also shows the military Jeeps.
Right, well, I know what you're talking about with the records, because they used to... you know, that's how they do their demos. They play a record and hand someone a brochure or a booklet while they're playing the record with this dramatic music and stuff. I've come across that. And then the same thing with, not to change the subject, but with like Betty Crocker recipes. They used to put them out on records.
Yeah, right.
And I got lucky one time and found like a set of four of those, and they went for about $80. But I know what you're talking about with those. And that, anything automobile with the records with that, you've definitely got something great there. I couldn't even tell you.
Well, I contacted Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me to get a hold of some appraiser to see how much it would be worth, because I was going to donate it to the Ford Museum.
Yeah, well, that'd be cool.
Because I've went online and that.
That's something,
to find this.
Right? That's something that is so rare that you're probably not going to even find it on eBay. So you got to kind of, if you do list it, make sure you do an auction, and make sure you do an auction like. Usually 5 or 7 days, but do it for like 21 days. You know, just keep repeating
that's
the
great.
Auction. Because some people give up.
Find out what something like that's worth. I mean,
that's the thing. You could try to find a automobile, you know, memorabilia guy who might give you an idea. But I think in this case, it wouldn't even matter, to be honest. I think if you just put it up there and stuck with an auction for three times, you will see it, you know, be bid up to, you know, what it's worth.
There you go. All right. Thanks,
Robert.
Well,
okay. Thank
awesome.
You.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's do one more call. We'll sneak it in. Let's get Frank. Frank, what do you got, Frank? What do you got?
I have coins from the Chicago Railroad Fair of 1949.
Okay.
It was held on the space where McCormick Place is. And on the one side of the coin is the Continental Bank facade on LaSalle Street.
Okay.
And on the reverse side is the Bank of Gold Gulch. They did a western town during the railroad fair, and I presume then that the Continental Bank did the Bank of Gold Gulch.
Right.
You would go inside. It was just like an old western bank, and you would go up to the teller, and then you would get one of those gold coins.
Right. Well, well, I could tell you, you got two things going there. You got a coin, and you got railroad, you know, memorabilia. And right there, I could tell you that would be very collectible. I have no problem selling, like, Union Pacific stuff, even not that old, you know, just people collect that stuff. So you got
Frank. All right. So 630 says, tell the guy with the Ford albums to call Volo Auto Museum. They may be able to.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news with Rob, traffic with Esmeralda. And we will continue with the swap meet. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's the download here on WGN Radios. Greg Flam is in studio. It is swap meet time. We are all getting together as a collective region to brag about our stuff. That's essentially this.
Bring it on.
I had a good tagline. You can't take it with you when you die, but you can take it with you till you die.
Can't take it with you till you die.
You can't take it with you when you die, but you can take it with you till you die.
There you go.
That's the swap meet, right?
There you go.
The idea of what you take with you. Let's go to the phone, Sean. Sean, what do you got? What have you taken with you?
What I was given to by my father when I was a young boy. I have a 2-foot by 10-foot cloth banner that was hung at Comiskey Park, which was the second to the last 1959 World Series appearance by the White Sox.
There you go.
My dad was 5'7", and he was on the insurance patrols with the fire department, and that was what he wasn't tall enough yet to be an actual fireman at the time, which was hysterical. But nonetheless, he was detailed to the park. In some form of control, crowd control, or what have you.
Right.
And they won at the end of the game. Obviously, they lost 4-2 to the LA Dodgers. But
right.
They pulled down this banner, and the banner is red and white stripes. It's like I said, it's 2 by 10 foot. But the coolest thing about it, it's still in great shape. It's a cloth banner, but on the top of it, it has a hand sewn baseball, and it says "Go Go 1959 White Sox" on it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Were the,
where do you have it? Do you have it like rolled up somewhere? Or do you have it actually displayed in your house?
I have it. I'm afraid, so I put it aside and I have it hidden. I really am embarrassed because I never looked into it too much to even get an idea. The only time I ever had anybody that was interested or came up to me, because I never really, like I said, did anything about it myself, was some guy that supposedly was a self-professed number one memorabilia collector.
Right.
A big wig at R.H. Donnelly, and he offered me $1,000.
There
he came
go.
Up from the second in the game that we won, the World Series, the last one we won with the White Sox.
Yeah. I mean, first off, it's very rare that you have that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think it's one. I can't find it anywhere. I've looked in newspapers.
Yeah, you're not going to find that. That's another one like the Eastland, change person.
And you know, the thing is, you already have a price point where with someone, I mean, that's, Greg's talked about that on the show. You know, if somebody offers you something, that's sort of where you're at, the ballpark, so.
Only takes one to buy it and two to bid it up, to something higher, so. And it's one of a kind for sure. Careful trying to accept a fast offer on it. I think it might be worth more than $1,000, to be honest.
Wow, there you go, Sean. All right, thank you, buddy. I like that. See?
No idea what price range.
If you do an auction, I would start, to be honest. You can always come down. I would start at $1,000 and see if it goes up from there, to be honest.
Okay.
If you know someone could list it for you.
Thanks, Sean. All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Susan. Susan, what do you got, Susan? What do you want to brag about?
Well, I've got a ton of antiques. I've been collecting since I was 16, and I'm 66. So, but Chicago-related, there is, in the Field Museum, there is a dollhouse. It's called Colleen Moore's Dollhouse. Right. And I am related to Colleen Moore. In fact, her real name was Kathleen Morrison.
Okay.
And she was from Port Huron, Michigan. My grandfather was from Sarnia, Canada, right across the border.
Okay.
Anyway, and I have a picture that I can see right here in my dining room. And the picture that I have says from Big Kathleen to Little Kathleen, because she was quote-unquote Big Kathleen, because her real name was Kathleen Morrison, and my Auntie Kay's real name was Kathleen Morrison. And so the picture says from Big Kathleen to Little Kathleen. And I met her. They had a film festival in 1979, and I met Colleen Moore.
Wow.
She was actually pretty funny. She was kind of like her films. I've got a book on all sorts of books about the old studios. And her films were pretty funny, and she invited me to a I said, did you remember my grandfather? She did. And anyway, they invited me to a party at the Mid-America Club, and Roger Ebert was there.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right.
Wow,
well, there you go. That's a
good
one.
That's a
good
story.
That's a good story.
That's what you want. You want the backstory.
All right. See, now that's good. And I like that, too, that she's looking straight at the picture in her living room.
Right.
It's up. It's something to brag about.
Yep.
And four stars.
Probably don't want to sell it because it's personalized to her.
All right. Let's go to Colleen. Is it Colleen?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Colleen. What do you got, Colleen? What do you want to brag about?
I've got a Mickey Mouse rotary phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was wondering, are those worth anything? It's about 40 years old.
Yeah, I mean, conditions are going to be the big thing with that. But, yeah, anything Disney, usually pre-70s, you can usually count on it being worth something. Have you, by chance, happened to plug it in to see if it still works? Because, obviously, that's something they're going to ask you as soon as they
last time we, a year ago it worked.
Okay.
I've got it wrapped up and everything.
Yeah, good.
Good.
Did it?
I don't have it in the original box, but it's in very good shape.
Like, right. Can I ask a question? When you want to ask it where the nearest restaurant is, how do you do that with a rotary phone?
just dial it.
Put all five fingers in there, twist it at once.
I'm just trying to figure. I've heard of these. I don't know what they are. So do I double click? Do I double tap it? Is there a swiping ability on it? How does it work?
Would something like that be worth?
I'm thinking minimum 75 to 100.
All right, there you go.
Oh, wow. Okay,
but,
cool.
Yeah, have someone check it out for you, though.
I will. Thanks so much.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
Colleen.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Keith. Keith, what do you got, Keith? What do you want to brag about?
I have a set of sleigh bells from a distant relative that was a surgeon in the Union Army in the Civil War.
Okay.
And it was a one-horse open sleigh, and they knew when he was coming to make calls, you could hear the sleigh bells. So I display those, and the grandkids love has a unique sound to it.
All right.
It stays in the family documented. But I have something I wanted to donate and I'm struggling with. My father-in-law was in World War II, went to the Great Lakes. I have a full documented timeline of graduating from Great Lakes, going to Okinawa, Peleliu, articles, letters, uniforms,
right?
Japanese uniforms, guns, money.
Yeah,
and permission
people are looking for that.
From the government. What I got permission slips from the government allowing to have these firearms, and I wanted to have them donated and displayed. And boy, am I struggling through the red tape to do that. And all the money to go to veterans. I don't want any money for this, but my mother-in-law is still alive, and I want her to be able to see that something was donated, and
right.
It's all in perfect condition.
Right.
I
can't think off the top of my head who you would go to, but I'm sure if you – there's so many people looking for a World War II memorabilia that I'm sure it wouldn't be hard to find.
I just like the idea that that's all documented. You got the timeline.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, too.
That's pretty cool. And in the sleigh bells, the other way that a Civil War doctor, he would ring them in the left hand while he was cutting off your leg
right.
with the right.
Distract you.
It was a distraction technique, right?
Give you a bullet to bite on.
Thanks, Keith.
You're welcome. Any price on the Civil War bells? You got any idea?
Oh, you want to give up the
bells? I don't know the price, but I can tell you they're definitely worth something. Anything Civil War is hot, so you've got something really good there. Have
like
checked
Kim
out.
Kardashian hot? Are we talking about? Maybe, not that hot.
Maybe just some people hotter. I don't know.
Thanks, Keith. I love everyone at the end. They'll be like, I love this thing. It's I put in my grandkids love it. How much would it be worth?
Yep.
All right, let's take
everyone's
a quick,
got a price.
Let's do a real quick break. We'll come back. I want to get to Jim. I want to get to David. I got a ton of texts to get through as well. 312-981-7200. That's the number for Swap Meet. Stay with us. It's Download Here, 720 WGN, playing Swap Meet. Got a lot of people on the line, so why don't we keep going? Greg Flamm is here. You can find him on Twitter at DuPagePicker.
And at Facebook now, too.
You got it? You got it?
Yeah, up and running. Yeah.
I was looking for the page. I couldn't find it yet.
Just
so let's
Facebook.com/DuPagePicker.
DuPagePicker. Okay. Yep. All right. I'm going to have to tag you. I'm going to tag you all the time. I got these great videos of monkeys smelling themselves.
Right. Nice. That's all I need.
Yeah, that's what you're going to get.
I put the pass link for the shows on there, though. So that'll
be
nice.
Did? Good. Yeah. It's just anytime. And there's so this hilarious thing Donald Trump said. I'll put it on your page.
All right, yeah.
I'll put it on your page.
Yep.
All right, let's go to David.
Thanks.
David, what do you want to brag about?
Well, I have an old seltzer maker.
Hmm.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's made out of glass. It's got a weaving on it, like a, I guess, almost like a plastic weaving, but it's not plastic. And it's got a, it's interesting because it looks like it connects to gas.
It's like the old cartridges kind of thing where you can turn like regular water into seltzer water?
It doesn't. No, it's not a cartridge. It's not set up for a cartridge. It looks like it's set up for some kind of pressurized gas thing.
Okay. All right. I'm stumped, yeah.
Well, that would be a good one for, I'd like to see you go on Antiques Roadshow and be like, it's set up for a gas thing.
Right.
See how they respond.
Those
I
are
don't
good
know
ones.
How seltzer is
I
made,
know.
So
I don't know either.
Know how they...
I would just think it was, is it lime flavored? Is it grapefruit flavored? That's all I know. All right, David. I don't know. I don't know anything much about the seltzer maker, but
it
sounds pretty cool. I want one. I think you should rep. Kind of darn it. Nancy.
Hey, Nancy.
Hello.
Nancy, what do you want to brag about?
Well, I have two very small books. So one is a collection of Whittier poems, one right after another in the book, each one for a specific day so that the book becomes actually a calendar.
Wow.
And it's from 1910.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been, you know, how the pages need to be sliced to be read. A lot of them haven't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're
sliced.
Still connected.
It's old school, yeah.
In a maroon suede cover with gold on Whittier calendar sayings. So that's a pretty cool.
That is. That's
thing.
That's pretty cool.
That's unique.
I'm sorry?
That's unique. I'm just not a book guy, so I couldn't really tell you what it's
Greg
worth.
Greg doesn't read.
Yeah.
The last thing
you know, if it's more than 10 pages,
read.
It's got to be a magazine like Stars Homes or something. You know?
Well,
I'm joking. I'm joking, but you've got something unique there. I would definitely have it checked out.
You can go to a used bookstore.
Library store or used bookstore, yeah.
And they'll take a look at that. That's interesting. I like the sliced page stuff.
Yeah, that it's not sliced.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that is
very cool. It's never been read all the way through, and they're dear poems of his, one right after another.
Yeah, I would think that. I would think that's going to drive up the price for sure. Go ahead.
And the second one is a 3-inch by 5-inch story of 100 operas, and that was published in Chicago. In it, a little book held in your hand. In it, there are 39 portraits of the current-day opera stars from the 1920s, Mary Garden and Madame Schumann-Heink. And then a page and a half of each of the 100 operas.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, so small books. All right, we'll take it.
Are you happy to keep them, or what do you want to do?
I'd be delighted to scoot them along to someone who would really...
Right.
Really want them.
Right.
Yeah. I, like we said before, try a librarian or a bookstore, yeah.
Like, really want them, like, really, like, cash want them.
Right. Good luck with that.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's get a Jim. Jim, what do you want to brag about, Jim? What do you got at home?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Hi, good, Jim. Man. How about you?
Good, good. Hey, I've got a watch that was given to me by when my grandmother passed away, and what I know about it is it was made by the Elgin Watch Company. Mm-hmm. It's from 1903. It's a pocket watch.
Okay. Wow. I like that.
Apparently, it was a gift to my great grandfather as a, you know, like a service award.
Right.
25 or 30 years of service for whatever. I don't even know what business he was in. But it still works. It keeps good time. And
yeah, they made them the last back then. And I can tell you, pocket watches are usually pretty desirable.
What I would do, Jim, is I would just fully commit to being a pocket watch guy. Like the kind of guy who's just always
awesome,
like,
you know?
Yeah, just have it like hanging out of your sort of vest. You got to get a vest.
Right.
That's right.
You know, and then
a monocle.
Yeah, and you just pull it out and be like, oh, do you want to know what time it is? Let me show you.
That's what they say. The watch starts collecting you, you know.
Yeah.
It just turns it around, you know.
That's what I would do.
So, any idea what anything like this would be worth? Or
no, I would take it in to a jeweler, a pawn shop. Just get it an appraisal. You know, don't act on that. Just get the
get
a starting.
Oh
yeah, no, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
yeah, good call.
You know, over 100 years old, and it still even has the second hand, which is not bigger than a piece of hair. You know,
no, that's definitely a nice piece.
Good, that's good. I like that, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Joan. Joan, what do you want to brag about, Joan?
Hi, Joan.
I'd like to brag a little bit about a picture that I have hanging in our dining room. It is about a 25 by 25 picture in original frame of the Pullman Association Football Club.
Okay.
Championship season of 1897-1898.
Wow. That's great. Is there someone from your family that was in that football club?
Yes, my husband's great-grandfather, Alexander McLaughlin Allison, came over from Scotland probably in the late 1800s to work for the Pullman Company, and I think they play soccer or football.
Wow, so there was a soccer club, so it's soccer.
Right, I was going to say football as we know it.
Football, that's the European name. But
yeah, no, I know, but I'm just saying it's soccer for those who we What is it, football like, or football?
Right.
That's really interesting. That's a great piece of history right there because of, you know, all the people that did come over to work for Pullman at that time, and it's interesting to have that hanging in your living room. Thank you for that, Joan. That's awesome.
We've had some great Chicago.
That's a great one. That's one of my favorites tonight.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad. I did take I had a negative made some years ago so I could make copies for some of the other family members, and I did take it down to the Pullman Association because they have an association down there.
Right.
And I think they lost it, and I'm not donating this.
No, don't do that.
They lost it.
If they lost the copy of it, you know, you're going to trust them with the original.
Get it together, Pullman Association.
Right.
You're losing. Oh, we had a great, oh, God, I don't know where I put it. Somewhere on this desk.
Right.
Thanks, Joan. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Good luck.
Let's try Michael. Michael, wrap it up for us. What do you want to brag about?
I got a guitar from 1976.
Uh-huh.
It was owned by Daryl Sturmer of Bill Collins' Genesis fame.
Right.
He played it from 1978, touring with Genesis.
How'd you get the
Bill
guitar?
Collins to 1983.
How'd you get it?
I'm a friend of his.
Oh, your friend?
It's a Steinberger, or which one? Because I know he played Steinberger and a couple other ones. Yeah, I'm a musician guy, so.
It's the Suntec he played.
Oh, okay. All right.
Is it, did he play?
It was actually the guitar. It was actually the guitar that was played on Face Value.
Oh, okay.
On the album.
Yeah. Did he sign it by chance or anything?
I'm not sure about its worth. Excuse me.
Did he sign it, or do you have anything? You know, obviously, if you were to sell it, you know, someone's going to want the provenance or some kind of certificate.
That was his. Yeah.
Right. No, I got a note from him.
Yeah.
I'm friends with him, so I have pictures with him and stuff. You know, him. With me and the guitar.
No, that's cool. Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you what it's worth. I mean, as much as I'm into guitars, that one offhand, I couldn't tell you, but I'm sure it's $1,500 or higher, maybe $2,500 or higher.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah. I'm just saying because, you know, In the Air is like iconic song. So, you know, it was actually played on that song on the album. So
no, I've seen Genesis many times with Daryl, so he's awesome.
There we go. 22 times.
Nice.
Thanks,
thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Keep that music going. Do you remember?
Gator drums. You got to love them.
Did that song? So must do something understanding. Is he going to play guitar on that too?
I'm not sure if he played on that. He was saying he played on Phil Collins' solo, but I know he toured with Genesis as well. I
can feel it coming. This is the end of Swap Meet.
Right. the dark episode.
Exactly. Well, this is where we have to be quiet for like 18 minutes if it's a Michael Mann episode or Miami Vice.
Right.
Still one of the greatest shots in television history when the song is playing and they're driving in the Porsche. And they're going down, they're not talking. That's so good.
Yep.
And it's radio, so if we just did that, it would just be... Greg Flam, thanks so much. Many great stuff. And for everyone who texted in, we just ran out of time. There were so many calls tonight. I didn't get too much of the text. And I got some really great stuff here. So please join us next week. And there's a lot of great stuff here. And I apologize for not getting to all of it. We're probably about 10 or 15 down. So
that's awesome.
But that's always good for next week. Greg will be back next week. Greg, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks.
That's going to do it for the show tonight. Patty Vasquez up next here. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. We'll be back tomorrow. The program, we got our weekend review. Also, The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin is back.